No, that's okay, I'll just stop it.
Thank you. Sunshine Statement. This regular meeting of the mayor and council of the borough of Atlantic Highlands is called pursuant to the provisions of the Open Public Meetings Law. Adequate notice has been provided by transmitting the resolution of annual meetings to the Asbury Park Press and the Two River Times by posting it in the borough hall on a bulletin board reserved for such announcements and by filing it with the municipal clerk on January 3rd, 2022. This agenda is complete to the extent known and formal action will be taken. Roll call.
Mr. Murphy.
Here.
Ms. Hohenleitner.
Here.
Mr. Dougherty.
Here.
Mr. Crowley.
Here.
Mr. Barakia.
Here.
Mr. Bombs.
Here, sorry, I can't do it.
Mary Gluckstein.
Here. Please stand for a silent prayer and pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And now, Mr. Citron, if you could please come up, I'm going to read out a proclamation.
That's a long drive to get back here, but we're in time, huh?
It was.
Okay.
What's the mistake?
Well, we appreciate that. So, on this occasion of his retirement, and let's come back, Ed Citron, whereas here today to express special recognition to Edward Ed Citron, to honor him for his distinguished career with the borough of Atlantic Highlands, and whereas Ed has served the borough of Atlantic Highlands Fire Department, serving as a fire police officer and firefighter with Book and Ladder, serving for 4 years as fire lieutenant, 3 years as president, and chair of the Fireman's Fair for the past 5 years. And whereas Ed has served the borough of Atlantic Highlands First Aid Squad, where he has served as a member of EMT, driver, president, and most recently as chief. And whereas Ed joined the EMS Task Force, where he has been deployed in support of COVID vaccinations, Boy Scout camperies, air shows, and many ambulance bus emergencies. And whereas Ed served as the borough commissioner on the Atlantic Highlands Sewage Authority and served as planning board member, as a founding member and vice president of the Community Events Committee, a member of the Beautification Committee, Fireworks Committee, Environmental Commission, and the Shade Tree Commission. And whereas Ed has proven himself to be a valuable asset to the borough of Atlantic Highlands with a vast knowledge of the town's infrastructure. And whereas Ed has worked constantly for the betterment of Atlantic Highlands community and the neighboring communities of Leonardo, Middletown, Highlands. And whereas the borough of Atlantic Highlands wishes to express sincere appreciation to Ed for his dedication to the outstanding performance of his duties during his tenure. And whereas the proclamation is presented to Ed Citron to serve as a reminder that although he is retiring, he will always be remembered as a valuable employee dedicated to both his positions and our community. Now, therefore, I, Loretta Gluckstein, Mayor of the Borough of Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey, and on behalf of our governing body and the citizens of Atlantic Commons, do hereby present this proclamation to Ed Citron as testimonial to the faithful and dedicated services which he has performed over the years, with our best wishes for continued success and happiness in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
about a volunteer. You know, sometimes thank you is just not enough for people like that. So thank you, Ed. I appreciate it. So now at this time, I would like Lance Huebny to come up, and he will be presenting life-saving award ceremony.
Good evening, everyone. For those that I do not know, I am Lance Huebny, the newly appointed chief. And let me thank you for all of your service. This is my second go-around, and it's a privilege to serve the community here in Atlantic Highlands. So on July 29th, the Atlantic Highlands First Aid Squad was dispatched to a man down, face down in the mud, feet hanging off the curb. How many people here, other than the EMS personnel and the first responders, have ever heard a dispatch? Never heard a dispatch? Okay. I'm going to play the dispatch for you of that night. The location of the dispatch was not the home. It was just a general location, and this was recorded off of the pager system through the Atlantic Highlands EMS. Let me play it for you.
So you heard the dispatch, CPR in progress. Sergeant Gurian, Officer Hoffman, and Officer Cunha were the first to arrive. With the training of Sergeant Gurian and Officer Hoffman, they jumped right into chest compressions. The man was in cardiac arrest. Not breathing, Sergeant. Not breathing, unresponsive, no pulse. Once again, with the CPR training that they received here in the community, the two officers jumped into action. Sergeant Gurian, Officer Hoffman, hooked up the AED, followed by Officer Cooney. Atlantic Highlands EMS showed up with seven EMS personnel from the Highlands First Aid Squad. Followed 5 minutes, 10 minutes, the paramedics from Hackensack Meridian showed up. Mike Welch, Tom Smith, good friends for many, many years. They're here tonight. They show up. CPR continued, defibrillation continued, and what happened was we loaded the patient in the ambulance and took the patient to Riverview. I called the charge nurse, and the gentleman, a resident, by the way, of Atlantic Highlands, was doing well, breathing on his own, speaking in small sentences, but alive. He was then able to walk out or wheeled out of the hospital and went to Jersey Shore and had some other medical procedures. My understanding is, as of yesterday, the gentleman is home, from what I understand, and I know that Browns, you know, kind of know who the gentleman is. So it's considered in the EMS world a CPR save. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to take the opportunity and recognize the first responders that were there. So what I'd like to do, Chief, did you want to say anything first, or?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
He's doing great.
Thank you. So let me call first Sergeant Adam Curry. Adam, come on. So these are the life-saving awards presented by the Atlantic Highlands EMS in recognition of your courageous and life-saving actions at the scene of a cardiac arrest on July 29, 2022 in Atlantic Highlands. You performed cardiac pulmonary resuscitation, or CPR, as your professionalism and training saved a resident's life. Presented by Atlantic Highlands EMS, signed by Lance Huebny, Chief, and Mayor Loretta Gustin.
Thank you.
call Officer Erica Hott. Officer Hoffman, same life-saving award presentation to you as well, and two pens for defibrillation and CPR saving. Job. Officer Dalby Cunha, come on up, Dalby.
Yay!
Say EMS, strong work, young man. Strong work.
Thank you.
There you go. That it's unfortunate, but the Atlantic Towns EMS had two CPR calls in the month of July, and Dalby was on both of those. Unfortunately, the first one didn't work out as well as this one, but we also have our teammates from Highlands. It's really been a great team effort that was on that CPR call earlier in the month. All right, let's talk about the Atlantic Highlands EMS. Tim Farkas, a very new member, probably he's been an EMT about a year. Tim is a veteran and actually is a combat medic in his day in the military. So Tim was there, performed chest compressions, defibrillation, which everyone saved this man's life. Tim, come on up. About a volunteer in the community, we have Brian Shan. Brian is the past chief of the fire department, past current president of the fire department, and Brian's been a member of the Atlantic Highlands EMS for quite a number of years. But Brian has his hands full with four kids, and out of the clear blue, Brian shows up and drives the ambulance. Brian, thank you, because we probably got there without you. Now, if you're wondering what I'm giving out, I'm giving these pins. They're called CPR citation pins, and they go on your badge lapel leadership. Some people have them so tall and high. I see Captain Murphy's got one over there, but that's what we're giving out. Now, in addition to the Atlantic Highlands EMS, Highlands always makes a strong showing, led by Jay, who's the president, and Billy Mount, who's also on our squad as our president, but Billy Mount's the captain. So Highlands was jumped into action, got there quick. We'd like to recognize the Highlands members as well. Billy Mount, come on up.
Thank you, Billy.
Billy's wife, Marcy, is also on the squad, and also Marcy is an EMR. She's on the Highland squad. Marcy, come on up. Rosemary Ryan, come on up, Rosemary. Rosemary reminded me that we worked together 25, 30 years ago.
I would be able to work on that.
More than that. And really, thank you for being there. Jay, thank you, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
There for Atlantic Highlands.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jay.
In the house tonight? Come on up, Nicole. Thank you, Nicole, very much. I'm happy you were there. Now, when the medics showed up, which I'll talk about next, the paramedics from HMH, Hackensack Meridian, it's very typical that one of the EMTs jumps in the back of the ambulance, which was Tim Farkas in the Atlantic Highlands ambulance, and then we get another EMT to drive the medic rig. And Nicole drove the medic rig to the hospital in chase of our ambulance. Thank you very much.
Woo!
I got Isaiah. Is Isaiah in the house here tonight?
It's not.
It's
not.
It's not. Okay.
The hospital.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah.
And we can't forget Cody. He's Cody here with us.
Thank you.
What a pleasure.
Thank you, Cody.
Now, I know through the last few months there's been talk about what is BLS versus ALS. BLS is basic life support. That is the EMT designation. ALS is advanced life support. That's paramedics. The paramedics basically are a mobile intensive care unit, called MICU. Their training is way above the training of an EMT, which is bad enough as it is, I assure you that. We have two of my good friends, Tom Smith, Mike Welsh, the two paramedics that were on the call. Come on. Mike. Mike and I go back so far that Mike's mother-in-law used to work for me 40 years ago, at least.
Oh, wow.
All right. And then we have Tom Smith. Tom, come on. Now, I know there's other business here in the community, so I have one last announcement. So, I decided through the other officers, Dan Scholler, Captain, Tom Stone is the Lieutenant, we decided that I'd like to host a free CPR class, a free CPR class and certification for the members of the community. You'll hear more about it in the next few days. It'll be on our social media, our Facebook, and our website. It's going to be August 25th at the Senior Building, 6:30 in the evening. It's the full American Heart Association CPR class. For those that want to get a certification card, unfortunately the card's $25. However, for those that just want to learn this life-saving skill, it is free. So the Atlantic Commons EMS is looking for members, of course. Come join us, learn this life-saving skill, and God forbid if it ever happens and you come across somebody face down in the dirt, legs in the street, you'll know what to do. Okay, thank you again. Perfect.
Thank you, Cody.
Bill. It is. And the crazy hours sometimes, too.
Yeah.
There's so much training for an EMT that I wonder how much more for a paramedic. I mean, it's a lot.
There is a lot.
You've got to really be dedicated.
Rosemary.
Just trying to get her attention. Rosemary.
Oh, bro.
I did.
Rosemary.
She's out the door.
She's out. Yeah. Whenever there's a swearing in or
once again, I can't even hear it. Once again, volunteers, everyone. Volunteers. So thank you. Thank them all. So moving on now, I have Harry Delgado from the New Jersey State Association of Chiefs of Police, and he is going to have a presentation.
Well, Madam Mayor, the chief didn't give me any warning that I would have to follow. I'll try to see him go first. I think it's very fitting that I come here to recognize the your police department tonight. As you can tell, you have a very, you should be very popular. So the reason why I'm here tonight is to recognize your police department for having achieved reaccreditation. Now, this accreditation is a very rigorous process, and it's a voluntary process. The police department has to submit themselves to in order to achieve it. In the state of New Jersey, there's 112 standards, many of which require multiple proofs of adherence. So, in effect, they build themselves back, you know, from the bottom up. Now, I'd like to share with you a few, indulge you for a couple of minutes, just basically what this consists of, or at least give you a glimpse of what they went through. So, the Atlantic Highlands Police Department has made a commitment to adhering to best practices at the state and national level in a highly regarded statewide law enforcement accreditation program. The program, administered through the New Jersey State Association of Chiefs of Police and the New Jersey Law Enforcement Accreditation Commission, has helped to transparently demonstrate the professionalism and preparedness of state law enforcement agencies. The New Jersey State Association of Chiefs of Police Law Enforcement Accreditation Program is purposefully designed to enhance the professionalism and transparency in the state's public safety system. Now, during these uniquely times, challenging times, and the threat to our health and safety, I think we would all agree that encouraging law enforcement agencies to follow standardized best practices and policies is a potentially life-saving, as we saw here tonight, and cost-effective investment of time and resources. So, accreditation, so that you understand basically what it is, it's a process. The foundation of accreditation lies in the adoption of standards containing a clear statement of professional objectives, accrediting in a progressive and time-proven way for helping law enforcement agencies to calculate and improve their overall performances. It is a certification by an independent reviewing authority, in this case, the New Jersey State Association of Chiefs of Police, that the agency was carefully measured against an established set of state and national standards. And I'm here standing in front of you today to tell you that in many instances, the Atlantic Highlands Police Department exceeded standard practices in the state for national level. Now, I know that citizens typically want to know what's in it for me. So, from the actual mail, the insurance body in the state of New Jersey, which states that research shows that accredited agencies have 11% fewer police professional liability claims, 18% fewer worker compensation claims, and 31% fewer auto liability claims. Moreover, municipalities that participate in a mail-affiliated pool, donor insurance funds, stand to receive substantial insurance premium discounts when the police department attains accreditation. I'm talking very fast because I know some of your time is already taken. But, and before I close, in addition to these fiscal advantages, there are other important benefits of accreditation. Accreditation provides objective evidence of an agency's commitment to excellence in leadership, resource management, and service delivery. Government officials can be more confident in the agency's ability to operate efficiently and meet community needs. And accreditation embodies the thesis of community-oriented policing. It creates a forum in which police and citizens work together to prevent and control challenges confronting law enforcement and provide clear direction about community expectations. I shall say, as a former command officer, we always thought that we knew what the community wanted until we asked them. And I think accreditation certainly pointed in that direction. Now, officers in accredited agencies can take pride, as I see many here tonight, that they have been objectively recognized for the professionalism inherent to the highest standards. After this rigorous process that in this case put this chief through 3 years of pain, there is an actual final assessment. We come here and we make sure that every proof is shown that you meet the UAG to all 112 standards. And so out of that report that you going to then go to the commission where the chief actually, and I believe board administration were present, let me just paraphrase some of what was in that report because I think it's important that you know it. The Atlantic Highlands Police Department has taken significant steps to continue to raise the level of professionalism by achieving reaccreditation. Whereas nearly 43% of all law enforcement agencies in New Jersey have achieved initial accreditation, 32%, I shall say only 32%, have achieved reaccreditation because the process is so rigorous. So this is a rigorous process. The accreditation process continues to benefit the entire agency. Chief Viner and his team, through their hard work and dedication, have fully embraced the accreditation process, specifically in the areas of policy development, best police practices, internal compliance, technology and equipment, and community engagement. Under the leadership of Chief Viner, the high level of competence, leadership, professionalism is evident within the agencies. I don't think I even have to say this because I guess it was proven prior to me taking the podium. But leadership, rank and file, a forward thinking, and engaged in self-improvement. So it is the opinion of the assessment team that the Atlantic Highlands Police Department is a highly professional and committed agency which exemplifies all of the tenets of law enforcement accreditation at the state and national level. So it's indeed my honor tonight, on behalf of the New Jersey State Association of Chiefs of Police and the New Jersey Law Enforcement Commission, because rightfully he stopped me. Hopkins could be the eighth grader she managed, so when he crossed, it was.
Not for long.
That means in our angle that he's going to delegate. And so, well, so he was. Hopkins is a great nation manager himself. The members of the Atlantic Highlands Police Department, the mayor, the council, and those citizens that they so proudly serve for achieving state reaccreditation, joining a very exclusive group of law enforcement agencies that have made this important commitment to veteran policing. So to all indeed, I wish congratulations, and I'd like to present the chief of the reaccreditation. Congratulations. I just want to say that when I first started this, I was kind of all told that I was going to do the credit. All right, I'll figure it out. So, you know, a lot of the stigma around it is that it's a bunch of nonsense and you run around like crazy proving that you're the latest and greatest. And as I started getting,
disagree with that,
as I started getting deeper into it, I realized there was a real purpose. This process makes sure that we are every single year continuing to provide the best service to our community members that we possibly can. This is an investment, and it's an investment in our community members to prove to everyone that we have the best policies, we have the best practice. We're doing everything day to day that, you know, the Chiefs Association and other associations look up to. So I just want to thank my department. You know, in the beginning, they're like, why are we doing this? And then it started to just, well, they kind of understood what was going on with it. I didn't have to demand them give me the paperwork anymore that I constantly ask them for. But, you know, there is a real purpose to it. And I thought it was important that we had them come here and just present us with this certificate tonight. And thank you to you guys for being an awesome community. And I just want to say about Adam and Erica, about a year ago, almost to the day here, they had another save last year, that CPR, same exact thing. So, and they were given a reward for that. So, you know, as far as CPR goes, I didn't really talk there before, but, you know, it looks great in the movies, but when you're on scene, it's an absolute mess. There's stuff everywhere. People are ripping everything apart. Your heart rate's just as high as, you know, a professional athlete, you know, it's insane. So, and CPR looks good on TV, but it's not easy. 2 minutes alone doing it is a hard thing. Everyone I've talked to who was on scene said, you know, it was the three officers at the end of the day that really got the job done, got them back. Hopefully in the future we can, you know, have a meeting with that person, and God bless the person that called it in. You know, if they weren't there, they also saved the life that day as well, so. Other than that, Mr. Delgado, thank you so much. Council, Mayor, thanks for supporting this project. And that's it. We can get the elephant in the room, you know, he gets the point.
Thank you. Okay. Just one more thing. It was not on the agenda, because if I did this, it probably wouldn't have been on the agenda. As you well know, I started Employee of the Month, and right now for August, please read off who it will be.
So let me just preface by saying this person's going to kill me tomorrow. This person has been working with the borough for over 17 years. Hired in December 2004 as Human Resources and Insurance Coordinator. Added the duties of Assistant Construction Administrator in September of 2013. Was named Deputy Municipal Clerk in 2018. She's also a Deputy Registrar and a Notary Public. She's married to Jim Merkel, great guy who we've all gotten to know here. She lives in Kingsburg, and she's a wonderful colleague. Our Employee of the Month is Elizabeth Merkel.
Thank you.
Brian and his photo bombing from North Carolina. Thank you.
This was a surprise.
Don't be, please don't.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Congratulations.
You back.
Well deserved.
Michelle?
Can the reserves come up?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
There's some empty seats in the, in the room if people would like to sit down. In the front.
So, Ms. Clark is on vacation. That is why, we have Ms. Merkel here tonight. And she has been running this week. So I thank her all the time. Just all the time. You can always count on Beth for whatever your needs are. So thank you, Beth. Thank you. Thank you.
So before we continue, Mayor, I would like to just, for the record, notate that our borough council, Jason Senn, is not here this evening. In his place is Kira Dabby from his law firm. So thank you for sitting in. We appreciate
it. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. And now, unfinished business. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm like going right down. Approval of previous meeting minutes, July 28th, 2022, regular meeting.
So, Mayor, I would like to request a motion to be made to amend the minutes to reflect Ordinance 10-2022 introduction. The minutes of the July 28th meeting do not reflect that Ordinance 10-2022 Veterans Affairs Committee was introduced.
I'm with that.
I'll second that.
Okay, roll call.
Mr. Murphy?
Yes.
Ms. Homeliner?
Yes.
Mr. Dougherty?
Yes.
Mr. Crowley?
Yes.
Mr. Barakia?
Yes.
Mr. Bombs?
Yes.
Minutes have been approved with the amendment.
Okay. All right. So now unfinished business. Ordinance 10-2022. Ordinance 9-2022.
Okay. So I'd like to ask to have those, to amend the minutes from the June 9th, as they do not reflect the cannabis ordinance introduction. I don't know if our attorney has anything additional to provide, but I'd like to ask for that to be amended.
I do not.
Okay.
I'll move that.
I'll second.
Okay, roll call.
Mr. Murphy?
Yes.
Ms. Hohenleitner?
Yes.
Mr. Dougherty?
Yes.
Mr. Crowley?
Did you want to say something, bro?
I was just going to say, I neglected to notate that, as indicated on the revised agenda, that is tabled to a future meeting.
Okay.
Okay. Crowley says yes.
Mr. Barakia?
Yes.
Mr. Bombs?
Yes.
Okay. Now, Ordinance 10-2022, establishing a Veterans Affairs Committee, the public hearing, and possible adoption.
I'll move it.
Murphy, second.
Okay.
Mayor, did you want to, since we have an audience here, did you want to state what the purpose of the committee will be?
It's a Veterans Affairs Committee, so that there are veterans that are in this community, and to help them and to bring awareness to the people, like during Memorial Day, know the history and the background of those individuals. We're going to have like three vets on the committee and two residents. So,
and if anybody wants to join this or any of the other committees, they can go to hnj.com. There's a tab, I think, where you can sign up and volunteer for the Shade Tree or Environmental or Parking Committee or the Veterans Committee, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, we're going to open that up to in January.
Okay.
Yeah, it's going to be January.
So you can always put your application mm-hmm. in. Always looking Absolutely. For volunteers.
Yep. So we have a motion second, like for the public hearing. How many people are on Zoom right now?
19.
19? Okay, thank you. Any questions from the public?
Chief, on the motion, the public to open up the hearing?
Yes. Okay, did motion second?
Make motion.
And then all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, there we go. Mr. Fisher?
For the consent agenda?
No.
No, for this.
This is for the Veterans Affair. Okay. Mr. Thomas?
Regarding the cannabis?
Nope, this is only for the Veterans Affair. Okay, thanks.
Zach Brown, 620 Woods Drive. I just said that I commend the council and the mayor on forming this body with recent passage of the PACT Act in Congress. I'm not sure, but I'd like to get it on the record that veterans in this country have been mistreated for a very long time and denied care for serious injuries and ailments that have been incurred during the course of their putting their lives on the line to defend the freedoms that we all enjoy. And I think that it's very important that we continue to take care of our veterans and honor the sacrifices that they've made. And I commend the council for doing that.
Thank you. Thank you, Zach. Is there anyone on Zoom with their hands up? Okay. So, since I see no hands and no hands on Zoom, I need a motion and a second to come out of public.
I'll move it. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, now I need a motion and a second for the adoption.
Crowley moves. Second.
Did you get that?
Just, yeah.
Okay.
Any of us.
Everybody.
Everybody. And roll call.
Mr. Murphy?
Yes.
Ms. Hohenlinger?
Yes.
Mr. Dougherty?
Yes.
Mr. Crowley?
Yes.
Mr. Barakia?
Yes.
Mr. Bombs?
Yes, and thank you for everyone.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Ordinance 10 has been approved.
Okay, since we have no workshop, now is the time for public comment, and I have to make sure that you know it's only on the consent agenda items only. The ones that we have for the consent agenda. The other time that you can speak is at public comment, but right now this is only for the resolutions that are on the agenda tonight. Okay, so how many people are on Zoom right now? 19?
20 currently, no hands raised.
Okay.
And when you speak, if you can please come up here to the front so the microphone can hear you.
Okay. Sneaky sneaking.
I apologize. I'm so sorry. Tracy Abbey White, 7 Hook Road, Atlantic Highlands. First of all, I'm very happy to see the resolution 130-2022 on the consent agenda. My question is, where do we stand with the commissioner? And will this be able to be on the ballot? Because I understand the deadline to be on the ballot for the November election is Monday.
So I
can speak a few points on that item. So in terms of the first question, where are we at with the commissioner? The commissioner has a deadline which is fast approaching. The attorneys representing all three boroughs have been in communication with each other. Our attorney has been in communication with myself and the finance committee on a regular basis to discuss exactly what I mentioned in the previous borough council meeting, which was to try to come to a funding formula that is to our liking, that we feel is fair for the community. All three municipalities' goal, I believe, is to submit a resolution that is mirrored by all three communities, identical, to the commissioner within the allotted time frame. The resolution that is on the agenda this evening will be asked to be tabled. The resolution that's on the agenda this evening, and I can get into it more when we get to that resolution, but there's been a request by the attorney representing the school districts that the funding formulas that have been agreed to be looked at first, and then the three municipalities would present their resolutions. So we've been formally asked today if we could proceed in that fashion.
I'm so sorry. I'm completely confused about what the last thing you just said. So this agenda, this will not happen tonight?
My request to the dais, to the governing body, will be that they table that and that we have a special meeting as early as next week.
So we will not make the August 15th deadline to get
That's why we would have a special meeting next week so that we could make the deadline. As you know,
so the special meeting is because the school boards want to look at the funding formula?
The school board's attorney.
Okay.
Right.
But just a question. Since the governing bodies are the ones that handle the finances, and that's your job, and the schools handle the schools and the education, I'm just curious as to why the school board attorney wants to look at our tax formula. I don't understand that.
So, and I don't want to speak for the, and I don't speak for the attorney representing the school districts, so I don't want to speculate, but I believe through this process, at least it's been my feeling, and I believe the feeling of the finance committee sitting here at the dais, and I don't want to speak for them either, but that this process in the past few weeks has been very transparent and very collaborative, and all stakeholders want to be on the same page. So at an abundance of transparency and caution, I believe, my personal feeling, that Mr. Bush would like to see and analyze the information, and all three municipalities, if we're still in agreement next week, we proceed forward. We in Atlantic Heights do not have two meetings in August, we have one, so that's why we would have to have a special meeting, and we would proceed with this resolution at that time.
Okay, so just so I understand, so the finance committee of the three boroughs who have come to some agreement on a fair and equitable distribution of funding is now going to be stalled until the borough, the attorney for the school boards approves it.
So a couple of things. So I'm not sure if stalled is the right word. There's been a request to have
synonyms, but that works for me.
Right. So there's been a request by us if we would oblige to allow a little extra time. Now, in terms of the finance committee, in our borough, the process has been managed in terms of coming up with a funding formula with our attorney, myself, and the finance committee. I cannot speak on what the other two municipalities, who they are working with internally to negotiate with their attorney, to work with their attorney. Here in Atlantic Highlands, it's been myself and the three representatives of the finance committee, which I think has worked out very well. I think we've worked very hard and on this. But again, I don't know who's been working on it in the other two municipalities. I'm not privy to that.
Well, I will stop asking questions because I think I hear my answer. But I really want to commend the fact that you were all working together to come up with something that was equitable for all of the for members of our community. And I'm sorry that everything has to take months, weeks, hours to get things done around here because people can't communicate. It's not your fault. Obviously, somebody wants you to do this. And shame on them. But thank you for doing
it. I'm sorry. I'm going to just take issue that I think it's using the word stalling or taking too much time, I think, is a mischaracterization of the process.
The agenda tonight, and now not happening.
Because, as Mr. Farragina said, this process has been very diligent, very thoughtful, and has been transparent, and all stakeholders, to use your term, have been involved in this process. So now's the time for them to look at it. This just came down the pike at 10:30 this morning, if I recall correctly. And so we were going to, well, to us on our agenda, to via email.
Yeah, the decision and request didn't come till late in the day. So there,
when did he have the opportunity to review it? Did he have the opportunity? When did he find out about it? The school board attorney.
I can't speak on the school board attorney.
Because I'm kind of surprised too. I showed up, found out it was off, and I'm a little annoyed with it myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I cannot speak on the other two municipalities or the school board attorney. All I could tell you is we received a communication from our attorney asking us that he had been in talks all day on and off with various stakeholders, and that Mr. Bush has requested that he would like the school board, that he as the attorney would like to review the funding formulas to make sure that everybody's on the same page up front, ahead of time. which I think is a prudent thing to do.
Yep.
So we don't have an analysis on the back end and people say, well, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense, this isn't fair. It's good to have everybody on the same page. So
perhaps you should have had them in the same page to the very beginning.
Again, I can't.
But thank you very much. I don't want to take any more time. I'm sure there are other people who have questions, but I think we all heard you. Thank you.
I would like to just add, that we are still on schedule to meet the Commissioner of Education's mm-hmm. deadline.
So we're going to have a another meeting next week.
Yeah, as stated, we will have a special meeting.
Okay.
Why don't you do it on time?
We are going to spend 2,900 pounds. Could you tell me, please, what the attorneys are for the board, or is it one attorney for the board?
So our attorney is Matt Giacobbe.
Right. But the attorney that requested this is for the sports.
Jonathan Bush.
I'm sorry?
Jonathan Bush.
And he represents whom?
He represents the school boards.
All three boards?
To my understanding, yes.
The Atlantic Highlands. Highlands, Atlantic Highlands, and Henry Hudson.
Right. The tri-district.
But when you say three boards, three boards. We have three boards, but Seabright does not have a board. I'm just making sure they're not representing Seabright. Do you know whether the other two towns received similar requests to delay this?
I can't speak on communications with the other two towns. I know
that I spoke to Carolyn Bruon this afternoon, and she did not make mention of it.
Yeah, I talked to her today, too. And what is the date for the special meeting?
It hasn't been determined yet. This conversation with our attorney took place right prior to this meeting.
Was the attorney for the school boards involved? The only reason I'm questioning this is because throughout this entire process, and it has been a long process, and I agree with Tracy, everybody's done a magnificent job of trying to work together and of putting this all together, and I know it's been a long, arduous process. But throughout it all, the school boards have said they're only interested in the education part. They're not going to be worried about the part that the borough has to worry about, the financing of it. So why is this board feeling that they should delay the action that your residents are expecting you to take tonight, because a school board that did not want to have anything to do with this in the beginning now wants to get involved in it?
So I'd like to answer your first question in terms of who the attorney has been working with. It's my understanding that the funding formula process that we've been engaged with, myself and the finance committee with Mr. Giacobbe, that he has been collaborating and working with the other two attorneys representing the other two municipalities to see that we all come to the same agreement on a funding formula. What his level of communication is with Mr. Bush, I have no idea. I'm not aware. There hasn't been any communication to me to indicate that.
I'm sure you've had a tough week, Mr. Perugin, and I admire you for being able to stick with it and for being able to handle it all. I know it's been a lot of things that's up. But so your action tonight in taking it off the agenda is at the recommendation of which attorney? Your own attorney?
It's at the recommendation of our attorney.
Okay.
Yes. Matt Giacobbe.
So, and you're acting, you've had a meeting, you've had a workshop, or?
I
don't know how everybody.
Myself and the finance committee did speak prior to this meeting. And, yes, and we're all aligned.
All the towns are in agreement, right, at this point. It's just this one review. So we absolutely must have it done on time, and if we do that, we haven't lost anything. But it's a little annoying that this happened at the last minute, because somebody showed up and didn't know about it. But it happens.
If I may say, it's a bit annoying that I get a major piece of information the morning of the meeting and no explanation thereof. So, you know, kudos to the attorney from the school boards asking us to pause. We should pause. We should have a chance to talk about this. We should have a chance to absorb the information and make sure that we all are in agreement. So, you know, that's my viewpoint. So I'll be on record and say I'm personally in favor of us tabling this to give us a chance to talk about it.
Well, the school board attorney was paying attention to the whole thing. It would not have been.
No. Ms. Smith, I'm going to disagree. That's a mischaracterization. I'll tell you why. is the school boards have not been involved with these discussions about this funding formula. I've never heard that before. I've never once heard that. Not once. And I think state law says that some of these the apportionments need to go through the Department of Education as well. So, again, I'm going to echo what the councilman just said. This just came and hit our mailboxes at 10:30 this morning.
Right.
That's not ample time to go and review this, because this funding formula is significantly different from the Porzio, which was 95.5, and it's also different from the proposed funding formula by the Keene Report, which was 72.28. This is 80.20. So, I'm sorry, but...
There's two different formulas.
There is two different formulas. There's a formula that also represents Seabright as well. But the portion that I'm looking at right now is the 80-20. So taking into consideration all those different formulas from 10:30 this morning, when we all have work, aside from what we do here in council, I'm going to disagree strongly with Ms. Abby White by calling it stalling. I think it's called due diligence. Okay, and so I think we need that time, and we'll have that meeting next week when we have the time to we can consult with other experts on this. This is something that's going to affect generations to come, and to just do it willy-nilly in a five-hour span, I don't think is doing the due diligence that we've spent to this point in time.
It's not willy-nilly either, though. There have been several meetings about this and press, but it is late. I'll guarantee you that, because we're pushed against the deadline. Mm-hmm. So I can meet you, you know, I understand what you're saying on that.
Finance department has had time. The rest of us have not, right. And you need at least four votes to get it through. So the rest of us have to get up to speed with finance and what the borough administrators and everybody else has done. We've spent 4 years, and you know what? We've come to a place with the Keene Report that shows a way forward to make this happen, mm-hmm. and we can help Seabright in a way that the Porzio Report did not, in my opinion. And so we want to continue going down the smart path. I'm sorry I get impassioned about it, but...
That's fine. I understand that very well.
Want to protect everybody here, you know?
I understand that.
I feel confident that we would meet. Everybody had an opportunity to look at...
At this point in time, yes.
But I would like to note, Mayor, that Mayor Brulon is also online with her hands up. She may go ahead and some clarification.
Are you here for Mayor
Brulon? Mm-hmm. Yeah, bear with me, Mayor Brulon, and I'm going to bring you over as a panelist.
She couldn't comment an open comment, and Smith, that's why I pointed it out, because there was a question by Ms. Abby whether she had anyone else that received comment from any of the other towns. Yeah.
But Mrs. Smith, are you finished?
No, I just wanted to ask.
Thank you.
I just asked, but I didn't mention it. You, or I didn't hear it, I'm sorry. You feel confident that even with this delay and your special meeting, which date hasn't been set yet, that we can still meet this deadline to have it on the November ballot?
At this point in time.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Because I noticed the resolution says for soon thereafter. Thanks. Sorry, Mayor.
Okay.
Sorry, Mayor.
Okay, just real quick, state your name and address.
Carolyn Bouillon, 12 Miller Street, Highlands. Also the mayor of Highlands.
Thank you.
Thank you. The only reason I'm not there in person is because I have COVID and I don't want to infect anybody, and so I'm home. These negotiations have been going on for weeks with the people designated to do these negotiations. I think it's incredible how far we have come in something that's been discussed since 1962, and that we are this close, and we are on the verge of tripping on the finish line. And I was actually quite shocked to see this on the consent agenda and not separately, where every person could speak to this resolution, what it means to all of our towns, and that all of the administrators and all of the mayors and your finance committee have worked diligently for weeks to negotiate a formula that is the very best, that gets every single town the most savings. How can this possibly be a bad thing? I'm not telling you guys what to do, but I'm telling you that my council is going to pass this unanimously. Seabright's council is going to pass this unanimously. And to stall at the whim of the school board's attorney, when we set the taxes, the boards don't set the taxes. This is incumbent upon us as elected officials to get this done for our communities. Our communities want this, and that is all I have to say. And thank you. And it would be my recommendation that we take this off the consent agenda and everybody votes on it individually. That would be my recommendation, just as a resident. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Brulon. Okay. So, moving on. I'm going to be asking questions of the consent agenda. Anyone else? What, Mr. Wait. Come on. Nope. Come on up. Come on up.
On the school thing, is there any other district in New Jersey that has a that doesn't do it straight on evaluation and has a pupil thing? I've never heard of it before. Mm-hmm. But obviously what it does, if you have any balance, the reason there are no kids in Sebring is because nobody with kids can afford to live in Sebring. Mm-hmm. And so if you have this kind of balance, it's going to move the taxes from Sebring to where people can afford to live, like Highlands and Atlantic Highlands. I see this as just simply a scheme so that Seabright's valuable waterfront property no longer has to contribute to Shore Region. And so, unless it's straight valuation, I don't think this is a good idea. It may be good for Highlands, Seabright, and Atlantic Highlands, but it's no good for Shore Regional, which is going to lose millions. And I think in the end you should see if this is going to add or subtract money to the whole pot. People who are on school boards are supposed to be looking out for the welfare of all the children in New Jersey, not just the ones in their district. So that's my first comment. My second comment is on the harbor resolution on the fees for next year. I said before, the harbor was given to the borough by the Arkansas family for recreational purposes. I don't see any recreational purposes that don't cost a huge amount of money. Boating, okay, it's a recreation, boat storage is not. And all the other stuff is not. Said it before, I'll just say it again. And my third thing is on the Sullivan, was there a resolution of an agreement that cost the borough money on that thing and the suit against not us? There was never anything on the agenda that I saw. Maybe our insurer had to pay. Was there some kind of resolution of that?
So you're referring to Resolution 127?
I guess.
Authorizing settlement of litigation. So that is also going to be requested to be tabled. We received a request late day today from the attorney that the JIF had assigned to this case, asking us to table it because the agreement has not been officially finalized.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Well,
good evening. Hello. Nick Collister, the 20th time. I just have a logistics question. Assuming we pass the funding flow, whether it's 80-12, 80-20, my understanding is that doesn't include any cost sharing or cost savings between Highlands and Atlantic Highlands. In the event that we pass this resolution and then don't necessarily reach an agreement with Highlands as it relates to the cost savings, what happens then? What's the next step there if an agreement can't be reached between the two communities?
Well, if there's no agreement, there's presumably no referendum.
No referendum?
But if there's...
passing this resolution to put it on the referendum now, right. So you can put the two based on the two, is what you're saying, and you have another written speech.
If no agreement is reached and there's no referendum, presumably nothing changes.
Okay. I understand.
I said to Mr. Ferragina earlier that I believe that there should be an escape clause that should be attached to the funding formula that says that the sharing agreement has been reached. Now, that would mean that the other two communities would have to have the same language on there, but I believe that they should be tied, but that's still up for conversation. So you're not out there alone in that thinking.
Anyone else?
Different subject.
Okay. Just,
Smith, 29 Leonard Avenue, Atlanta, Towns. Councilman Murphy, I'm only asking you first because this is the order that you normally vote in. But could you tell me why you voted in favor of the minutes being approved June 9th at the first meeting where you approved them?
Sure. I had missed what the error was, and from what I had seen, it was approvable for me.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Sorry.
At the time I had reviewed the minutes, it was acceptable for me to vote yes. That's why.
And so, Leonard, can I ask you why you voted for it?
I didn't only vote for it, I also moved it forward, so I have two things to answer it for. I'll be honest with you, I read every bit of the packet. Sometimes twice.
I believe that.
And you and I've spoken a lot, so you know that I'm always prepared for the meetings. I'll be honest, what I read minutes for, as somebody who writes them for my nonprofit, is for mistakes and things that aren't represented properly or typos. That's what I read them for, and I didn't catch an omission. But now we know, I know, and from now on I will be holding the agenda side by side with the minutes. it's truly just that I don't look for an omission, but now I will moving forward.
Thank you.
It sounds like this was an inadvertent mistake that has now been corrected.
I'm sorry?
It sounds like this was an inadvertent mistake that has now been corrected. So if council does not wish to answer the questions that seem to be looking for some other explanation, council does not have to.
I know they don't have to, but, and I know you're new here, but this is a very good council and there are very clear to the people here in Atlanta Towns. And rather than just ask one or two councilmen how why they voted the way they did, I prefer to ask all of them because it's only the fair thing to do.
Thank you. I'd be happy to. And not only, I seconded the motion to approve the minutes, and I voted to approve it. All six of us did. We voted unanimously. It was an honest mistake. It was an honest mistake that they were omitted from the minutes. It was an honest mistake that we approved them. I, like Councilman Hohenleitner, do not compare the agenda to the minutes. I look for errors. I look for narrative, making sure that what we talked about is portrayed correctly. And it's really that simple. I mean, I like the councilwoman, I always read minutes, and I just missed it. So, my bad.
Mr. Crowley?
I actually caught it. I caught the mistake, but I questioned myself that I thought I had the date wrong. So I thought that we had done it on the date. So I didn't raise the question because I thought the error was mine and that I was mistaking it. But I also know that I think we're doing the right thing by delaying it because we could say that there's a recording that's available. Somebody can look at the recording. And there are other ways of garnering the information. There are a dozen lawn signs around town saying come tonight to the meeting for the cannabis vote. So we know that the message was out there, but I think we're doing the right thing by pushing this because if anybody only does rely on the minutes, then they're not confused by it. So we're doing the right thing by making sure that it's going to be publicized and we'll reintroduce it. Plus, let's be honest about one thing. Yes, you are. The state has come through with some additional changes regarding cannabis, which means that we have to bring our ordinance in line with that. So tonight would likely have been delayed anyway because of those changes.
If I can just interject and remind everybody that we're really only supposed to be talking about the consent agenda at this point in time. Cannabis is not part of the consent agenda.
Well, I was just asking for what you did act on, why they corrected the minutes from the meeting. Mr. Brodkin?
You know, when you're at the meetings and you know what's going on, you read the minutes, it's easy to look in and say, I know exactly what that means. Right. And that's part of it. We had a discussion, though, afterwards, and we felt there was enough information between recordings and other things that we could look at that anybody who wanted to would know that. But out of an abundance of caution, we decided to make it very formal. So that's what we did. But I looked through it with my understanding. I've been at the meeting. Yeah, it was introduced, and everything was going along. But when you're at, I think you can tell, whenever you write very well. I know when I write, often I have to review because my knowledge of what I'm writing doesn't impart to the reader, and it was something like that, and then I make a correction and make it more clear, and that's pretty much what we did.
Terrific. Mr. Bones?
I will basically resonate with everyone else that said. I mean, it was clearly an omission and it was not intentional by, I don't think anyone's intention. I typically will go back and listen to the minutes a lot of times, and that particular meeting I didn't happen to listen to the minutes and coincide, but this, again, as Mr. Baracchia just said, a lot of times these, and Mr. Crowley as well, a lot of times minutes are summaries of what the actual recordings are. And I go back a lot of times and we'll listen to the actual recording while I'm driving to an appointment and so forth. And as Mr. Baracchia said, it's in my mind. I know it's there. I think it's properly introduced. It was an omission. We all missed it. You know, it's not like it was intentional.
Okay. Thank you kindly. I never occurred to me that it might have been an intentional thing. My question is, on something as important as you all know that this particular ordinance is, I would think that you all would have made certain that you had covered everything to do with this ordinance before you did introduce it. I might also point out, I'm not an attorney, so I don't know this, but I have always learned that recordings are not the official minutes of the meeting. The official minutes of the meeting are the ones that are certified by the borough clerk, and this did not appear in the official meetings, even if there are recordings available for it. Thank you all very much, and appreciate it, and I appreciate all your honesty. Okay. I believe every one of you can tell me your story.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else for the consent agenda? Anyone on Zoom?
No, Mayor.
And how many people on Zoom right now?
22 attendees.
22, thank you. So, with that, and no hands up, the consent agenda. These items will be enacted by one motion. If detailed deliberation is desired on any item, council may remove that item from the consent agenda and consider it separately. Do you want to, which ones are we?
Just don't start with one.
Okay. Resolution 82, authorizing the execution of the MOU, Captain Harry Murtha. And that's from the tabled of 414. Resolution 124, appointing Class 2 Special Officer Austin Cheeseman.
Regarding that resolution 124, I'd like to just read a little brief bio that the Chief of Police provided me regarding Mr. Cheeseman. Austin Cheeseman is the middle child, where he has an older and younger brother. He grew up in Allentown, New Jersey, with his mother and father. He currently resides with his girlfriend of 1.5 years in Long Branch. Austin frequents Atlantic Highlands due to his girlfriend growing up in the area all her life. He graduated from Monmouth County Police Academy in May of 2022 with his Class 2 certification.
Okay. And Resolution 126, establishing the harbor rates, summer 2023, winter 2023-2024.
Mayor, we hold that for discussion.
Okay.
But I also think you went past.
I know, I did. Resolution 125, renewal of the monthly joint insurance, or Monmouth Joint Insurance Fund. Resolution 127, authorizing the settlement of litigation.
Okay, so we are requesting that resolution 127 to be tabled to the September 8th meeting. The settlement agreement has not been finalized, and that is at the request of Mr. Provenzano, who is the attorney that was assigned by the JIT to represent the borough.
Resolution 128, 2022, authorizing disposal of surplus property. Resolution 129, payment of bills. Resolution 130, regionalization commissioner petition.
Okay, so we're requesting that that item be tabled as well, in light of our conversation earlier where we would have a special meeting at some point next week.
So I'll move forward to resolution 82, 124, 125, 127.
128.
Okay.
Not
127.
Not 127.
Oh, here we go again.
I know.
I'm going to start over. 82, 124, 125, 128.
Eight.
They're in
a
row. That's good. 129.
Yes.
Correct.
I'll second that.
Okay. So, roll call.
Mr. Murphy.
Yes.
Ms. Hollenleitner.
Yes.
Mr. Dougherty?
Yes.
Mr. Crowley?
Yes.
Mr. Barakias?
Yes.
Mr. Bombs?
Yes.
Mayor, the consent agenda items have passed with the 126, 127, and 130 being pulled or tabled.
So, Mayor, I'll move 126 forward,
no.
But I just quickly, at the Harbor Commission meeting, we discussed revisiting the film location fees, and there's been some research done in the meantime, so what we'd like to do for expediency is to move forward the fee schedule as is written, and to carve out the section that refers to the film location fees, mm-hmm. and just what our fee is not in line with other municipalities in Monmouth County. So we just want to revisit that at the Harbor Commission, and we'll bring it back at our first meeting in September.
Okay.
Yeah. So the fee doesn't take into account, second, all the money that the film crews will spend in addition to the fee. And we've got some experts on the council and elsewhere really have told us that the fee, they look at the fee first and sometimes make a decision to not come. So if the fees are reasonable and they come, they can spend 20 or 1,000 or more dollars in town with our local businesses. And that's what we want to encourage rather than making a $500 a day fee.
Okay. So now we have a motion and a second. I need a roll call.
Mr. Murphy?
Yes.
Ms. Hohenleitner?
Yes.
Mr. Dougherty?
Yes.
Mr. Crowley?
Yes.
Mr. Baraki?
I'm sorry. Since it's been pulled, I don't know the rest of it.
So you're just voting on
I'm this. Just voting mm-hmm. on the harbor fees, not the film permit. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And yes.
Mr. Bombs?
Yes.
Mayor, resolution 126 passed with the fees taken out.
Thank you. So moving on, reports from the council, Councilman Murphy. What?
I'm sorry, I'm
Start.
Gabby. 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 Do we need to officially table the resolutions that
yes.
separated out?
Yes. Thank you. Okay, I need a motion and a second to table 127 and 130.
I'll move that, Dougherty.
Crowley seconds.
And the portion of the 126, the film fees.
I'll still move that.
Yeah.
Crowley still
set. Okay. Mr. Murphy?
Yes.
Ms. Hohenleitner?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Dougherty?
Yes.
Mr. Crowley?
Yes.
Mr. Barakia?
Yes.
Mr. Bombs?
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Mayor, resolution 127, 130, and 126 with the film fees have passed.
Okay. And now, with regards to ordinance 9/2022, yes, I need a motion, a second to table that.
Crowley seconds.
And roll call.
Mr. Murphy?
Yes.
Ms. Hohenleitner?
Yes.
Mr. Dougherty?
Yes.
Mr. Crowley?
Yes.
Mr. Barakia?
Yes.
Mr. Bombs?
Yes.
Mayor, ordinance 9 has been approved to be tabled.
Okay, thank you. So now we're moving on to the reports. Councilman Murphy.
Thank you, Mayor. I will defer police and fire to Councilman Bombs and Darting. I will jump into first aid, and I'll... As many of you saw from Lance's report, we're seeing a lot of positive momentum within the squad. And it's things are moving in the right direction, which is very exciting for our community. There were 50 calls answered for July versus 13 calls in June of 2022. From August 1st until today, that's just within 10 days, the squad has already answered 17 calls. This all adheres to the mission of the squad, and that is answer the call at all costs. So the team continues to build and grow within this mission and help our residents in their times of need. Training continues to be strong. Two members of our first aid squad will attend next week's PHTLS class, which stands for Pre-Hospital Trauma Life Support. The class will issue 16 continual education credits. as well as the August drill that's coming up. There was a large turnout that came out to represent the squad. The EMS response to psychological emergencies was well received. This course issued 3 continual education credits. An EMT needs about 48 credits over a three-year period of time for that reference. September's drill will also be a 3-credit course on pediatric emergencies. In October, the squad will host 3 New Jersey state mandate refreshers, A, B, and C, which are for airway, trauma, and medical, 24 continual education credits in total. Continued maintenance on all equipment has been serviced, and a special thanks to those involved for helping out with that. Squad is sponsoring, as the chief mentioned, a community CPR class at the Senior Center on Thursday evening, August 25th at 6:30 p.m. There will be a social media post by the squad that will give an update as well as a sign-up link. If you are interested in taking part in the course, feel free to send an email to info@ahfirstaid.org. Please come out and learn this life-saving skill set. To add to that and the importance of these kind of services, I will tell you, early when I first joined the squad, there was a training course of CPR that the chief had given me as part of my requirements to join the squad. And during the CPR training, we went through standard CPR training, and it just so happened to be a few extra moments that we had. And with that, Chief Lance said, you know, would you like to learn some pediatric CPR? We had some time. I said, why not? He said, I happen to have this here, this dummy here. He wasn't talking about me. Thank you. But and so we went ahead and he did the training on that course. Now, these are things that you never hope or think that you're ever going to have to need. And the story that goes with this is, you know, only a few weeks later, 3 weeks later or so, I happened to be on a vacation with my family. And my son, while in the hotel room, suffered a seizure. Unlike, he's never had one before. It was actually fever-induced. But when you see something like this, and as the chief said, you know, it's different on TV than in person, and you're called to jump into action, the adrenaline's pumping, and the feelings that you have are almost overwhelming. To see my own child in that state, where he actually stopped breathing, and had foam out the mouth, it was horrible. And it was only thanks to the training that I had received only 3 weeks earlier that I was able to jump into CPR, pediatric CPR, with my son. To the point where I felt the gasp. You know, he had stopped breathing. I didn't have a pulse, and it was without question the scariest moment of my life. So I wanted to take a moment to, once again, as I said earlier and in other readings, thank the chief for that training. And I tell you a story for no other reason but to encourage all residents, take advantage of this free course, because you never know, and you never know when you're going to need it. So it's fantastic to have. I commend the squad and the chief for putting this on for our community and adding this service to our residents. Camaraderie continues to build within the EMS members, the fire department, as well as the police department. This is at an extensive effort through the chief, and it is highly appreciated. We have two new applicants, with one new recent one announced today or mentioned today. Membership committee is meeting at the next meeting next week to discuss these. There's one application, which is a career fireman. One application is an EMT with over 10 years of experience. And one, which is recently introduced today, is a young man within our community who is already trained as an EMR and has gone through the cadets program within Highlands. And he's going to be a vital asset. Overall, there are a little over six applications in various aspects of completion. If anyone in the public would like to join this winning team, as our chief likes to call us, as we've become, please contact Lance Huberney at 732-492-6389 or email him at lhuberney@ahfirstaid.org. Additional chief's shout-outs, as Lance likes to do. Is a special shout out to our captain, Ann Scholler, as well as our lieutenant, Tom Stone, for continuing to strengthen the line, which in return strengthens our squad. An additional shout out to Jimmy Phillips and the entire Public Works Department for the prompt service to bring our ambulances and equipment to emergency ready status. Moving on to recreation, Mayor. Not a whole lot to talk about. Next meeting will be August 18th at 6:30 p.m. Public is welcome. Soccer registration is still open for just a few more days. Concloses at August 15th, and this is for K through 6th graders, $60 for the season, as well as our little kickers, ages 3 through 4. Three sessions will be held for them at $30 at cost. The summer basketball program has concluded. I'd like to give a big shout out to those that were responsible for making this such a success, Chris Parmesan, Claire Kozak, and all those that helped. Mm-hmm. We do not have an announcement or any report for DPW, and I will defer to other councils for the rest.
Thank you. Thank you. Councilwoman Holtminer.
Thank you, Mayor. I have just a few things tonight. You've heard a lot from finance and personnel, so I think, and we're congratulations, Mrs. Merkel, now that you've composed yourself. We're really excited to give that to you this month, I know. Sorry. You're like our
sorry, but thank you.
You're our utility player. You know, you do everything here, and it's we're really glad to honor you. In terms of the harbor, there's a lot to report in the harbor. I'll leave some of it for Mr. Brock. I'll leave you the finance part and the moorings. We were able to memorialize the shore casino lease, so that is now completed. And Lance Huboney's CPR class will be taking place August 25th, as mentioned. That'll come before the special events, but I'm sure it'll be approved. We're excited to welcome back Henry Hudson's tennis program to our courts this year.
Good.
The borough and the harbor employees attended a spill prevention control and countermeasure planning process, and they were all trained on that, which is really good. It has to happen every 5 years. The skate park is going to be resurfaced very soon, and Mr. Romeyer is also, we're talking about some other improvements to the skate park potentially with some grant funding, but this is something that will impact the park immediately. There was a power outage in the harbor on July 15th, which affected one of our pumps. We were able to repair one, but are we still waiting to repair the other?
Yes.
Okay. And so the borough employees worked really hard to take care of that situation. It was not great. I'll leave finance and the other fun stuff for Steve. Briefly for the shade tree, I'll leave most of it for Mr. Doherty. They haven't met this month, but I really want to ask everyone to thank the DPW when you see them. They've been taking very good care of our trees. The shade tree is a volunteer commission, but the borough employees have really helped in this drought to make sure that the shade trees that are on borough property have been maintained. And then green team. From Ms. O'Dwyer, we're working on round 2 out of 3 submissions due at the end of August, and our goal is still silver certification. It's a lofty goal, but she's asking if anyone on the green team needs me to help them with any of the certifications required to come to me. One of the things that we're working on, and we've approved to be a food collection site for our food pantry in Atlantic Highlands, and that will help us also toward that goal. And I think I reported on open space last month. That's it.
Thank you. Councilman Doherty.
Thank you, Mayor. Mm-hmm. I will be brief this evening. Quick update for fire. The new apparatus committee is going to meet later this month to finalize their in-house specifications in order to provide them to the manufacturers regarding the new piece of equipment we're hoping to purchase in the near or midterm future. Planning board met on August 4th. There was a significant and excellent conversation about the ordinance 09-2022. I strongly encourage everyone, if you haven't taken the time to listen to the recording, please do. There were very few people attending in person. If I may add just to some of the context of beyond the procedural issue that we had with the minutes for the introduction of that ordinance, and the new regulations being put forth by the commission, there were significant suggestions from the planning board that this body would be wise and likely to incorporate into the final ordinance that's considered. So regardless of the procedural issue or these new regulations, this ordinance would have been tabled tonight because these changes were significant enough that it would require reintroduction and a future deed for public hearing and possible adoption. So I just want to make that perfectly clear. And I want to pass along my thanks to the subcommittee. There was a cannabis subcommittee on the planning board consisting of Marissa Zuzulak, Dave Kaprinsky, and Katrina Majewski. Dr. Marissa Zuzulak. They worked very diligently. They provided lots of context. It was an excellent discussion. And, you know, I think there are lots of people here tonight that are interested in that topic. I encourage you to listen to that recording. It's a worthy discussion. In addition to that, the board heard and approved two applications that evening. One was for a minor site plan and change of use at 68 First Avenue, and another was for bulk variances of 35 East Garfield. Both applications were approved. The planning board will meet next on Thursday, September 1st at 7 p.m. in this room and on Zoom. The Environmental Commission will meet next on Tuesday, August 23rd at 7 o'clock. Regarding the EV chargers topic, which I've reported on previously, we are planning a workshop meeting featuring East Environmental Commission Chairman Blake Deacon at a September Mayor and Council meeting to learn more about these and to discuss next steps on the two New Jersey BPU grants that the borough successfully was awarded for the implementation of EV chargers here in town. So I hope you will, when those are announced, you'll mark your calendar and you'll come and hear that conversation. Shade Tree, I have not much more to add to Councilman Hohenleitner. Beyond Shade Tree has no scheduled meeting in August. Our next meeting will be held on Wednesday, September 14th at 7 p.m. And again, the fall planting schedule will launch as soon as we're able to do so weather-wise and we are able to secure the contractors to put in 29 new street trees here in our community. Parking Committee has also not met since our last meeting. Its next scheduled meeting will be held on Thursday, August 18th at 7:30 p.m. But regarding the Holly Tree Lot, which is something that we've reported on the last few meetings, the committee was informed by Chief Scott Reiner on August 8th that now proper signage is in place. So the six-hour parking and overnight parking permit regulations will be fully enforced in that lot. So I want to thank the police department, the Department of Public Works, for all their efforts and support of these additional spaces that are provided to our residents. And that, Mayor, is the end of my report.
Thank you. Councilman Crowley.
Thank you. I'll add one thing to the environmental report, which is that the environmental committee will be joining us on Atlantic Highlands Day, featuring Touch a Truck, which is Saturday, October 22nd. So you're going to have quite a presence there. So, and anybody else that's sitting up here with any of your other committees, if you'd like to join in on that day and bring some representatives, set up a table, you're more than welcome, more the merrier. Recreation, the only thing I'll add to what Councilman Murphy said is that we had our very first movie Sunday, it was on Sunday, and it was Dirty Dancing. Uh-huh. And I will say that a certain mayor's mother was really enjoying herself.
It's her favorite movie.
And we had a good turnout. We had about 35 there. Unfortunately, we don't know how the movie ended because it started to rain about 10 minutes away from the ending.
I can tell you, no one puts baby in a corner.
Isn't there a limit? There's a very famous limit.
Yep. All right. Our next movie, free to everybody out on the lawn at the marina, is on Saturday, August 27th. And I think it's going to be Goonies. And that was all chosen by all of our community here. Mm-hmm. And then parking, you already talked about that. Technology and communications, I'll defer to you, Councilman, but basically last night it was just sort of going through how we need to keep simplifying and refining the landing page. And so Steve and I will be reaching out to all the rest of you with your committees of looking at the information that currently exists on the page, what we can put into archive, and what you still want to promote. So we're just trying to simplify the number of layers for viewers when they come to ahnj.com. And I think that's it.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Brock.
Yeah. All right, regarding finance, nothing actually going on in terms of finance and changing the budget or anything, but one thing that's nice is we have Doug is going to talk about projects we have approved. We've got about $837,000 worth of projects this year. They're approved, partially for roads, for parks, and various things. And that's nice to know because that's money we don't have to come up with in the budget and helps defray taxes. So I want to thank CME for being able to do that and keep track and on top of that. In addition, there's an $890,000 application in if that comes in for more roads and road resurfacing as well. The regarding the harbor, we talked about the rates. Also, overall, we're up 4% year over year. There's a little bit of slowdown in launching, partially, we believe, due to the high gas prices. There aren't a lot of people wanting to go out in a boat and burn hydrocarbons at the price they're at. But again, we're doing pretty well year over year, just the same. Leases, I know Ms. Hohenleitner mentioned the casino, but I don't want to forget the hot dog cart. We renewed that lease as well. One of our harbor, one of our employees, Julio Miranda, you may know him. He's been around a long time, but he's the gentleman that had worked through the, one of the dry cleaners over in by Food Town for years. His wife passed away. We want to offer our condolences to him on that. Also, August 27th, we're going to have a boater fishing flea market. It's pretty popular. It's really very localized. It's just people in the harbor generally, but everybody can come. I know I picked up a couple good reels there last year, or the year before, actually, when we did it. And we also went to bond on towboat building. Our architect sent a letter to the bonding company, and we asked them to pay for the repairs that have to be made. We didn't put a price on it. We just wanted to, at this time, get them to approve the repairs, and then we're waiting for a response from them. There have been some problems with the towboat building. It's just come up in the past. We've been working on, and this is really, I don't know if you'd call it a last resort when you go to bonding, but it's definitely the latter phase of not getting what we want from our original agreement with the builders. Cannabis committee, everybody's heard about regionalization. We've also heard about, so I won't discuss that, except that I've been working on it for 4 years. You know, it's been back and forth, and we've had people very strong opinions for and against and back and forth. And that's all good. It's all part of the process and the delays. It does get frustrating when you get delayed. I was a little frustrated tonight because I wanted to see it, you know, after 4 years, just done and in a good way. But in the end, everybody here has an important opinion to make, an important point of view from you and members on the council. So even when we don't agree, I think it's important to just, I always like to listen, hear their opinion. And, you know, if you're very objective about it, we can come to a good decision. Although it is a little frustrating, that's just part of the process. With that, everything else has been covered.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Bonds?
Thank you, Mayor. The Atlantic Highlands Police Department so far has responded to a total of 1,405 calls for service, including 49 first aid calls and fire calls. They investigated 17 motor vehicle crashes during the month of July. The police have initiated a Lock It or Lose It campaign. Their goal is to warn everyone whose vehicle is found to be in such a condition it could be easily stolen or have contents stolen from the inside of the vehicle to make them aware of the situation and the amount of vehicles that are being stolen. Detective Travis Morgan is spearheading that. So you may see a flyer on your vehicle or one given to you. Take the advice, you know, if you leave your vehicle on the street or if you're living in your driveway, take the keys inside with you. Unfortunately, there's a lot of bad guys out there doing some bad things, stealing cars and so forth. EMS task force has not met, but as Councilman Murphy said, the answered calls have dramatically increased. Congratulations to Captain or Chief Hubney. Congratulations to Dr. Citron on his retirement and all the work he's done there. EMS task force is going to be meeting again in a couple weeks, so we'll have more to report there. We've also had OEM Director Sarah Weimer, who's been keeping us all on the all up to date on the excessive heat, reminding all of the chairs of the various different departments about the heat warnings and including storm warnings. Sarah continues to continue her training with the OEM. And what else do I have here? I think that's it. And last but not least, as the Vice President of the Tri-District Education Foundation, I just want to throw out there that Chili Fest is being taken over by the Tri-District Education Foundation as the benefactors for their STEAM and STEM program, and that will be on October 1st from 5 to 9 p.m. So we hope people come out and join us.
Thank you. And Administrator's report.
Okay, thank you, Mayor. A few items this evening. First item is we received a communication from New Jersey DEP. The state is in a drought watch as persistent dry and hot conditions continue to stress the water supplies throughout the state. If conditions do not improve, declaration of a drought warning or a drought emergency with mandatory water use restrictions may become necessary. Voluntary conservation measures during a drought watch can help to avoid more serious and restrictive drought conditions. On August 3rd, we received a communication from the White House Office of Intergovernmental Affairs to have U.S. flags lowered to half-staff until midnight August 4th in honor of the passing of U.S. Representative Jackie Walorski from Indiana. DPW has installed a solar top light on the Center Avenue flagpole, so it'll now be officially and technically illuminated in the evenings. JCP&L has advised the borough that from August 11th to the 18th, weather permitting, Hilo Air will be mobilizing to the JCP&L region and will begin performing routine patrols on all JCP&L lines. These patrols are anticipated to take approximately 1 week to complete, but as always, work is strongly weather dependent and completion could be impeded by any post-storm or outage-related patrols that may occur. The helicopters to be used for these patrols are as follows. Hilo Air Blue and White Bell 206, tail number N894HA. So if you see this helicopter hovering, please do not call the police. They're aware of it. We're aware of it, and so is JCP&L. Next item. The Monmouth County Stone Bridge on Mount Avenue, MT-50. We received a communication from the county engineer who's informed us that the borough, that they scheduled a geotechnical inspection of the cracked mortar conditions on the bridge. They intend to repair those cracks before the winter to prevent additional freeze-thaw damage. Their geotechnical engineer consultant will provide a written report and plan of action following their inspection and evaluation. Regarding the borough's previous request to them to install to allow us to install two ornamental bridge lights on County Bridge MT-50. They were preparing an installation, maintenance, and hold harmless agreement for the borough. We should receive the draft agreement soon. On Monday, August 8th, I, along with the mayor and council representatives Hohenleitner and Doherty, attended the Habitat for Humanity Monmouth dinner at the Beacon Hill Country Club. We were presented certificates and Habitat community partner hats, which I'm sorry to say we didn't bring with us this evening. They're very nice, bright blue, hard construction hats. As many of you are aware, Habitat has built a wonderful home at 21 Leonard for a new family. Their name is the Riveras. Very nice people. They were there that evening. We met them, and it was very nice to be part of that. I'd like to officially thank Muriel Smith for bringing the discrepancy on the minutes to our attention. So thank you, Muriel. We appreciate that because we were able to proactively work towards a resolution for that as opposed to it being presented at the last second at a council meeting to us. And so thank you for that. I'd also like to notate that the system is working well tonight, our new system. So this is the first night without any glitches, so knock on wood. I would like to, where am I next? Congratulate Beth Merkel, well deserved on her award. And I'd also like to thank Kira Dabby for stepping in for council tonight, legal counsel. And other than that, I just want to reiterate that, you know, this week we did not have our clerk in, and Beth Merkel really stepped up. There was a lot of work to do this week. She has three or four other roles that she does on a regular full-time basis, and to take on the deputy clerk position this week, really she stepped to the plate. So thank you. And that's it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Mr. Rollmeyer?
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Very briefly, Many Mine Avenue Park. I'm in coordination with the borough's contractor for that project. All materials are in place at this point. They are targeting the week of September 12th to mobilize and commence demolition and roll right into construction. I expressed to them I did not want the park to be taken out of service and then wait for them to return to build it. They're projecting approximately 4 weeks turnaround time for demo, new material install, and installation of the port-in-place rubber safety surface. With regards to the 2022 road program, as you may recall, it's partially being funded through the 2021 DOT grant. At this point, all seven target areas have been surveyed, base mapped. My team is assembling the plans now, and we will put together a final cost estimate for everybody's consideration once I have the plans in place. I'd like to bring the plans, specs, and cost estimate to governing body in the month of September, gain your concurrence and authorization to then go to DOT to seek their authorization to start the public bid process. What that would do is line up a contractor, potentially to be awarded a contract this upcoming fall ahead of the award deadline to preserve that grant. The 2022 CDBG grant program, the borough has received a correspondence from the county. At the end of June, the county formally made the award for that program. Our initial request was $232,000 for the bathroom facility over at Center Avenue Park. The final grant award allotment came out to $181,000. So at this point, our office is working with the pre-manufactured building company to dust off the quote that they provided us in support of the grant application many months ago. We're asking them to update that quote for us so we see where it stands today relative to the award amount of 181. So if scope needs to be revised with regards to any improvements associated with dropping that building in place, we can work on that as budget permits. South Avenue Park, again, our survey is done, base map is done. We have taken the input that was received from the public at our initial public meeting to develop a concept within the usable building envelope. What we have is basically what was asked for, one playground facility, bank of swings, safety surfacing, a little seating area, some landscaping, educational plaques, and some sensory equipment as well. The basketball court is there, and the pavement is there, and we're looking to add two goals for a non-standard size court to avoid enlarging it any further and increasing the impervious. So with that concept plan, I'm now coordinating with the ESCNJ co-op vendors to provide some pricing for us to make that consideration as to what the final scope will entail. I know there is money in place now associated with the remediation, and we'll see what the current estimates come in at with the programming discussed. That's all I have.
All right, thank you. Do you have anything to add?
No report, thank you.
Thank you so much for filling in. We truly appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, so now comes the public comment. I'm just going to ask how many people are on Zoom at this time?
19 attendees, Mayor, no hands raised.
Okay. So it's 19. If you have a comment or a question, please move to the front of the room underneath the mic. Please state your name and address.
Just go up.
Just go ahead.
I'm sorry, I have to go first because I'm about to fall over because I'm exhausted. My name is Melina Bradley. I'm a resident of 121 West Highland Avenue. I'm a mother, a realtor, a military spouse, a volunteer everywhere on the leadership committee of our real estate company, which is the second largest in the state. I'm also an award-winning realtor, and the reason I'm speaking to you today is because I'm deeply concerned about the addition of a dispensary in tiny Atlantic Highlands. I have lived in big cities, big towns, and my biggest concern is the effect on home values. I think the valuations will be adversely affected. I plan to do more and more research for you, but as a person who sells $30 million of real estate a year, I can tell you hand over heart many stories where if a client drives out of the neighborhood, which ours is very small, drives out of the neighborhood and sees a CBD smoke shop, a vape shop, the bar, the local whatever, that it immediately has an adverse effect on the client's perception of the town. And because many of our buyers in Atlantic Highlands, because of the ferry, come from another state, and they're not familiar with the community, I think I just wish for all of us as the governing body to really take into consideration what that would do to equity, what that would do to our families' valuations of their homes, and where that responsibility will lie. I've been thinking of 100 places you could put one where it wouldn't affect, but there are not very many ways in and out of the town. So I just encourage you until our next meeting to take that into account. And I will also, as a realtor and someone who loves our town and loves our community, do the same and come back to you with more information. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Hands up.
Val Dario, 3 Harbor View Drive. Since this started with the cannabis, I have done research, and everyone keeps saying it's legal. It may be legal in the state to have dispensaries,
bless you.
But federally, it is not legal. That is why pharmacies cannot dispense it. It is still considered a class one illegal substance. That being said, that is why pot dispensaries have to deal as a cash business only. And until they figure it out to put this money somewhere, you are dealing with, let's see, Seattle Times reported several pot shop robberies and deaths because of it. And one of the people that held up a pot shop out there was 16 years old with weapons. So in this community, we're going to subject our community to an instance where you have an all cash business that could easily be robbed. And comparing pot dispensaries to bars in Atlantic Highlands, we have 3 places you can buy alcohol that are just liquor stores, but all the rest are restaurants, most of them high-end restaurants. And even one of the high-end restaurants, you have to bring your own alcohol to. So you can't compare that, and they're not all cash businesses. You can use credit cards for those. So you're not subjecting people to a crime that is gonna happen. You know, years ago, they lowered the alcohol drinking age to 18. Thought it was a great idea. Some great ideas turn out to not be such great ideas. Raised it to 21. You're gonna do this and find out it's a bad idea, you're gonna let a can of worms get opened up that you are not going to be able to close. Many towns have already voted this down. Middletown is one of them. Now, Highlands, I believe, voted for it. Uh-huh. Kingsburg voted for it. So, you know, do we need one right smack in the middle of those areas? Rumson voted it down. Fairhaven voted it down. You know, you're making a mistake if you let this go through. And you're going to see big problems down the road, and it will be of criminal nature. All the police that you have here are going to be working double time. And already, I just heard we have some bad crimes happening with stolen cars. You going to add to it? I don't think so. I don't think it's going to be a very good idea. And it'll be too late once it goes through.
Okay.
So with that said, I'm going to be quiet now, but I hope you're loud enough to make this clear that we don't need it in this town, period.
Thank you.
Cameron Fish, 85 East Mount Etna. I'm going to sort of take the opposite of that. I just want to say that it is a bit more legal. So we have a legal business. It is a sustainable business. I've lived there for 30 years. How many businesses have come and gone from First Avenue? Many. Tremendous amount of restaurants flipped over. High-end kitchen stores are here and there and gone. This is probably going to be a sustainable business that will last quite a while. I don't think they're going to... I don't know, my experience with the subject anyway. The third thing is that I did see that 72.5% of the voters in Atlantic Highlands voted for legalization of marijuana. So that's a pretty big number. That's almost the silent majority, based on what's probably going to come later this evening here. So I would say that maybe we put it up to a vote. Put it up to the vote if you're going to have a dispensary or any, which one of those levels that we're going to have available in Atlantic Highlands. We've already voted for legalization. So we don't want to say, oh, we want to be like Rome, so we don't want it in our neighborhood. It's going to bring the criminal element. That's hearsay. That's hearsay at this point. The fact is that I don't think a lot of criminals are going to come to Atlantic Highlands, show their ID, identify themselves, and pay three times what they would pay on the street for marijuana. So we're building it up in our heads. We're making a lot of propaganda, a lot of statements, a lot of things that are not based on facts. So this is a cash cow. Maybe not a cash cow, but it's probably going to be a very good business. It is sustainable. We can use the tax revenue money, and it will be a vibrant thing. Everybody that comes to the marijuana place, they're going to have the munchies directly afterward. The restaurants will do business. That's a little joke, but the fact is that I do think that if we had a vote based on the 72.5% of people that voted for yes for legalization, let's do it that way. So that's it.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Dawn Greenlee. I live at 104 East Washington Avenue. So, well, we don't have to speculate on anything. I have a report here. This is an organization called SAM, Smart Approaches to Marijuana. And it's a 2020 impact report. It's called Lessons Learned from State Marijuana Legalization. And it is reviewed by researchers from University of Colorado at Denver, Harvard Medical School, Boston Children's Hospital, University of Connecticut, and others. And I just want to say my background is in child development, and my degree is in child development, minors in psychology, and worked with many families, kids. Also extremely spiritually tuned person, and I think just with all my experience and knowledge, it's not a good idea. But I wanted to comment on the fact that I think everyone would agree this is highly a family, in large part a family town. So I'm concerned about kids and families and also real estate. I thought of last night, like, you know, I don't think this would be a positive thing for my home value. But anyway, I just wanted to comment on, excuse me, I'm going to summarize this because there's a lot of charts and graphs about, you know, traffic fatalities and but that's increased since some legalization in particular areas and particular states and emergency room visits and cannabis use by teenagers and all these increases, and everything's increased. So I'll just mention, again, this is This is called SAM, Smart Approaches to Marijuana, this organization. And this was sent to me by a person who has researched marijuana, particularly use of marijuana, the effects of marijuana on the developing brain of teenagers and young adults. Mm-hmm. Her son passed away from cannabis-induced psychosis, which is a very real and very common thing. She has an organization called Johnny's Ambassadors, and I saw her, and anybody on Facebook may have seen, and I posted the heck out of back in spring maybe. There was a talk at the Bank Regional Legends, and I posted that from every town page to get anybody there that wanted to get part of that about the impacts of marijuana use, especially on me. So I followed her page on Facebook, and I get emails from her as well. I could tell you just about every day there's another story posted by another youth that died from cannabis. cannabis-induced psychosis, and it's often suicide is the leading cause of death. So it is absolutely, marijuana use is absolutely physically addictive.
I know.
Like alcohol or anything else, you know, you tend to, your body adjusts and then it needs more and more and more. It's the same high, the same intense.
That's
I've never tried marijuana, I never will.
Please remember to, you have to, thank you.
But, so I just wanted to point out a couple things with this report that uses solid facts and statistics. One item, Colorado traffic fatalities when the driver tested positive for marijuana, there's a significant increase between 2013 and 2018. There was a 25% increase in cannabis use disorder, which is known as CUD, among 12 to 17 year olds in legal states. In general, I wanted to, mention in business, there's supply versus demand, right? Well, we know that sometimes supply can actually create demand. Sometimes when a product or service is made available, it actually creates a market for that. I think that's a principle that a lot of people know in business theory. So it looks like by what's on this report, I'm trying to be brief and not trying to go through every single thing and anybody can look this up. What has happened is the availability has created an increase, a substantial increase in use, a substantial increase in traffic fatalities. And why is that important? Because what I just said about the psychosis and our brains are developing through our mid to late 20s, so it's just not really good for young adults to be using marijuana or teens. So, but there's just the overall what I see from all of this is that it has created the availability and legalization has created an increase in the use, which is substantial. Here's something, calls to the Poison Control Center for marijuana in the state of Washington. It looks like it's a bar graph, it's about doubled calls to the Poison Control Center for marijuana, literally doubled between 2014 and 2018. in marijuana for, in Washington.
Would you like to forward that to the council and mayor?
Yes.
Okay.
But the bottom line is absolutely the availability of marijuana creates a significant increase in use. Here's a key outcome, here's a summary. Higher rates of marijuana-related driving fatalities, issues with legally sold but contaminated marijuana vapes. Vaping, I looked up, by the way, it is not harmful, and it's definitely not good for your lungs and whatever else. And it can affect people around you. It's not like water. It can affect people around you. It's not, shouldn't be used indoors and all that stuff. I went to a concert recently, I went to a Dave Matthews concert. Nobody enforced the rules. I had a coughing fit for 3 days after that because people next to me were smoking marijuana. I thought they were going to do a few hits. They did it all night long, the kids right behind them. Not a high level of consideration. Yes, like later, yeah. All right, you enjoying it? Well, at that point, I couldn't even, like, breathe. I got sick of her. I'm like, well, if I have some fresh air, she's like, well, it's a free country. I'm thinking, classy, so I felt like the smoking rules may be going out the window to some extent since this marijuana has been legalized. And who's going to enforce that at a Dave Matthews concert? They're not going to, limit rates for that. They have a smoking section, but no one will get there, so. Anyway, other key outcomes, more marijuana-related emergency department visits, hospitalizations, accidental exposures, expansive and lucrative criminal markets, exacerbated racial disparities in marijuana industry participation in criminal justice enforcement, increase in workplace problems, including labor shortages and accidents. And here's a note from the U.S. Surgeon General, quote, I don't want anyone to, he said something like, I don't want anyone to mistake that I'm saying safe for anybody's general use. So anyway, there's definitely solid information, facts and statistics that show a substantial problematic outcomes.
Okay.
Of marijuana.
Okay, thank you.
From a spiritual perspective, I'll just say without getting too deep, it's not a good idea.
Okay.
It's not going to bring the right energy around, quite physically and literally speaking.
Okay.
I'll forward this.
Thank you. Thank you.
What,
forward to Mr. Farragina. He can send it to the rest of the council.
I can give you my email address after you. I can give it to you now. It's R. Yeah, why don't I write it down?
Bob, do you have a business card up front?
I'm glad you asked. I have one right here.
Can you hand it to
him?
Yes, please.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. I'm moving around the.
I have my arm.
Okay.
Nikki Rass, 49 8th Avenue, Atlanta, Highlands. Just something I wanted to say. I do agree wholeheartedly with Mrs. Bradley. I'm also a real estate agent, and I agree 100% that it is going to hurt the values in this town. However, I'm not going to speak about that. One thing I wanted to come to you and say, I had written a letter several months ago about an employee that you have, who is James Phillips, who I've known since before he was born. And I had met with Mr. Ferragino and the mayor and several other members of the Chamber of Commerce, because we've been having an issue on First Avenue that hadn't been taken care of in a very, very long time. And we had gone to have a meeting and discussed everything. And to my surprise, when it came to the car show, that the annual car show that we have for the Chamber of Commerce, I got a text. I spoke to Jimmy, and he had said, "Oh, we'll take care of the extra garbage cans, whatever." Well, at 5:30 in the morning, I woke up to a text that said, "I've already had the street cleaned. We have extra garbage cans." I mean, and after during, they picked up the garbage, they swept the streets, they did everything. And since then, I've been getting little notices from Jimmy now and then of all the different things you've been doing. We really appreciate it. The light posts have been painted. You're picking up the garbage. It's not there, quite there yet, but I just wanted to mention and let everybody know. I think you all got the letter that I had sent out, but I just wanted to say a public thank you to Mr. Ferragino and to the mayor on how it went, and I'm going to Mr. Ferragino to send a message in. But anyway, I just wanted to tell you what a very good input, not only Jimmy, his crew, everybody worked very, very hard.
I know.
And everybody should be proud, and hopefully First Avenue continues to get better. But thank you again, and
you're welcome.
I just wanted to give kudos to the
thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Calicerto.
I think facts are important. I think data is also important as it relates to cannabis. We talked about real estate values, we talked about property taxes. Things that are very important to us. Between April 2017 and April 2021, property values rose by $17,000 more in states where recreational marijuana is legal, compared to states where marijuana is illegal or limited to medicinal use. On average, home values increased by $470 for every $1 million increase in tax revenue. With each new dispensary a city has, property values increased by an average of $519. Additionally, home values increased by $22,090 more in cities with recreational dispensaries compared to home values in cities where recreational marijuana is legal, but dispensaries are not available. Those are big numbers.
Where is your data from?
I'll tell you. That is a study based upon labor statistics. It's available for all cities.
No, everyone stop, please.
I will tell you. It's done by Federal Real Estate, and it was an evaluation using data collected from the Tax Foundation and the Bureau of Labor Statistics. This information is available to everyone.
Stop.
No one can help any of you. Okay? And I understand that you guys are very passionate about your position. So am I. In addition to that, we're all concerned about our property taxes. No one in here wants their property taxes to go up. This allows us an additional revenue stream to fund different programs. When you see Highlands or when you see Kingsburg get a new fire engine or start a new school program, how are they paying that for that? They're paying for that through additional tax revenue. In New Jersey, in the first month that dispensaries were legal, the state generated $24 million in sales in 1 month. From 12 dispensaries, that's $2 million a dispensary. My understanding is that we could tax the dispensaries at 2% on their gross sales. In the aggregate, if each dispensary does, it doesn't have to do $12 million a year. If it does $6 million a year, that's $120,000 of tax revenue just from the dispensaries. If you include the tax revenue that will be generated from the manufacturing, which is an additional 1%, you're talking about $2, $300,000 a year, potentially, in tax revenue, which is effectively what we would be saving. You know, we're talking about the school regionalization. Everyone's excited about that because it's going to create savings for our community. This is no different. And if you don't have the taxes to go up, if you can't have a flat budget indefinitely, you have to find additional streams of income to do so. One could be dispensaries. Another one could be the charging stations that Mr. Donahue was talking about, because they'll be leased to the producers of the energy. You have to find additional streams of income to be a viable community. If you don't do that, your property taxes are going to be hard. It's plain and simple.
Thank you.
Mr. Calisaro, what were the dates that you mentioned? I missed
April
that. I'm sorry.
2017 and April 2021.
17.
Thank you,
sir.
Thank you.
She's right. This is not elegant. Sorry. Hi. My name is Drew Eldridge. I'm a resident of 103 Bay Avenue. My dad is the older Drew Eldridge. He has less hair. A little bit taller. He's very active in the AA community at the church right up the hill. He's been active in that my whole life, pretty much since I was about 5 or 4 years old. And the reason for that has been alcohol. My friends' families, my friend sitting right there, my friends at Hamilton Regional School, which I'm sure we're all familiar with, but it's not, I can tell you, as a young person, I'm 21 years old, I'm still kind of young, although the wrinkles are starting to show, that marijuana is not the thing that is killing young people. It is not. It is opioids, and I can hear the giggling, and I can hear the heckling, but I can assure you that it's not. It's the opiates and the mixture, especially of that with alcohol. Ketamine is legal. It's completely 100% legal. The main cause of drug overdoses in New Jersey is from opiates. It's not from marijuana. In fact, you cannot overdose on marijuana. That's physically impossible scientifically. And I think what irks me the most as a young person is this room is not to, no offense, is full of, with a lot of older people. Older people that I'm sure, not through fault of their own, but may have gotten out of touch with a lot of what young people think in this town. And these young people are soon to become leaders like yourself, or principals, or teachers, or mothers, or fathers. And they will be the next generation of this town. I think it's
please
considerate of this generation to focus on the needs of your own profit than the health and safety of the community. I could sit and talk about real estate prices all day, but I'd rather talk about health, wellness, the need for a mental health revolution within this country. I don't feel like arguing about real estate prices or whether my property value is going to depreciate or appreciate. I care whether my child is going to survive and have a healthy welfare in this town. I don't know whether profit or health and wellness should be the goal when it comes to dispensary. I think that's something we generally need to agree on. I think it should be health and wellness, but obviously there are some people who disagree. I also just want to respond that there wasn't a profit to be gained from the dispensary, which is not true, as the gentleman
Nope.
stated. There is a profit to be gained from the dispensary, actually a lot of profit to be gained from the dispensary, both medicinally and recreationally. A lot of the medical patients within New Jersey, I am a medical patient within New Jersey, I are tax exempt from the program. That applies to all medical patients, but recreational patients do have to pay a tax, which can actually go up to 4% now, not only 2%, which is going to be obviously to a larger increase in profit. I just want to respond to someone before mentioned the organization SAMS, which is what the data was based up. That's been a declassified organization by the National Institute for Mental Health since 2019. It's a religiously biased organization, so therefore it cannot be welcomed in the scientific community without a certain amount of distaste, I guess I would say. I also would like to respond to the cannabis-induced psychosis comment. As someone who's dealt with their own mental health struggles myself, my friends dealt with their own mental health struggles themselves, As I'm sure you know, there's a mental health crisis within this country, especially among young people. I can tell you with 100% certainty that cannabis is not the leading cause of that crisis, nor is it the reason that your teenagers are going crazy, or I'm sure having some form of psychosis, no. The 1%, I'm sure it's got to happen somewhere, but the majority, no. It's coming from the people here who are choosing to ignore us and instead heckle and snicker at us when we come up here and try to talk about what's affecting us and what hurts us. When you giggle and you laugh at us and you tell us that we can't speak or that our opinions are invalid just because we're young, that's where the distaste comes from.
We on the day.
This is not aimed in any way, shape, or form.
Okay.
I'm saying, I think it's a bit counterintuitive to the argument as a whole just to discount the value or opinion of a young person simply because it's coming from a young person. But other than that, that's all I
have. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Like I'm trying to go around. Is there any fun? Okay.
Sydney Spicer, 64 Newman Drive. Very long list. I'd like to start with something that Mr. Jim Krause mentioned at the last meeting about a possible email blast. I think that with everything that's happening tonight, the regionalization of cannabis, it would behoove all of you to be able to reach residents well ahead of events and meetings to let them know what's happening so nothing is being sneaked up on them, so we don't have to put divisive and kind of mean nerd science to let people know when things are happening. Instead, you guys could email everyone at the beginning of the month, these are the things that are happening in the town this month, please come to Ludi's, whatever. I just think that's a very simple thing that could fix a lot of the divisiveness that we're all feeling, I'm sure you guys especially. So I think that we should consider Mr. Krause's suggestion. I also want to thank Councilman Crowley. The movie theater had the popcorn from, or the movie on the lawn had the popcorn from the movie theater, and I thought that was amazing. I love that. It was awesome. I'm so glad that you did that. Thank you so much. I also want to thank you for your shout out for Tetra Truck with the Environmental Commission. I think that's going to be a really fun event. I hope everyone in this room, whether you're here to be mad or happy or whatever, that you'll come on October 22nd for Atlantic Highlands Day, Touch a Truck, and also the Environmental Committee and Shade Tree Green Community. Everyone's going to be there. And it's going to be really, really awesome, especially given what Mr. Duffy is talking about with the electric vehicles and what we're going to be doing with that. I also want to thank Councilman Lori Hohenlinger, because with everything that's been happening, there's been a lot of things that I, not just myself, I know there's a lot of residents who have been experiencing some really negative interactions amongst the community, and there's been bullying, there's been harassing, there's been mean stuff, and I just want to thank you for taking the time to let me know that you're here and that you care about people in this town, and it made a world of difference to me, and I just want to thank you. I want to say this week something really big coming out of the medical community, which is that SSRIs are not effective against depression. That is just something that we've said as a community, as a nation, and as a world, that if you're depressed, you take SSRIs, and it'll help with depression. Well, the entire medical community has just backtracked and said it works for some people, it doesn't work for others, but there's actually no evidence that it helps with depression. I have said many times that as an adult user of cannabis, well, after the age of 21, that I use cannabis to help with my depression. If I had decided to go the big pharma route and get SSRIs, there's no saying whether or not I would be alive today, because I probably would have gotten the help that cannabis has afforded me. I just have a question. Was there an increase in crime on August 2nd of this month?
I think we'd have to consult with the police department to get their statistics,
okay,
which we could do.
Because, I don't know, some people might know, Kevin Smith was here, and he invited about 250 adult cannabis users to our town where they lined up and took over the street for a good couple hours. I don't think crime was committed. I didn't see any bad types. I just saw a bunch of people who really care about the film industry and also cannabis, and the town is still standing. So I hope that that's evidence
that some of the media stuff that is said is not true. You can have cannabis users of all different stripes, as I mentioned. I have friends who are radiologists, veterans, children's book illustrators, volunteer ambulance drivers. They're everywhere, and it's really ugly to determine that those people don't deserve the same rights as everybody else. Also, this wonderful gentleman did also mention something I wanted to say, that any organization that's using the term marijuana as opposed to cannabis is not acting in good faith. Marijuana is a derogatory term. It should not be used at all in this discussion. It's cannabis. Someone else mentioned, and it was a funny joke, and I laughed, but it's actually inaccurate. You cannot, as the planning board has met and discussed this many times, you cannot consume cannabis in a dispensary. So if you come to the dispensary and you buy cannabis, you have to leave. You can't consume it on the property. You can't consume it outside. There are laws to prevent this. So anybody who's concerned about that, that's not part of what we're talking about. Another thing that was mentioned, you have to be 21 to go into the facility. You have to be 21 to purchase. And so as I have respectfully listened to anybody who's concerned about their children should not be allowed in the store. And if the store, the dispensary potential business allows the kids into the store, they will be removed and they will have their license revoked. You cannot have that. I just want to mention, for the record, because some people have said that all I can do is spend on cannabis, and I just wholeheartedly disagree. I would really like it if a Medicare shop resolution could be considered. I think that with the PACT Act and all that we have experienced, have seen, going on with veterans, Councilman Crowley, thank you so much for your time. I hope that you continue to push it forward and that we can discuss passing the Medicare for All resolution as a town. I think it would go a long way to at least express to some of us who feel bullied and outcast by this whole thing that's happened last week, that if you pass the Medicare for All resolution, that at least some of you might care that some of us need help. And we find that help in various ways, and it would be nice if you have the Medicare for All resolution and let Mr. Frankel know that that is something that we need as a state. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else on this side? Okay, no, but I'm just moving around the... Okay, Mr. Ass.
Hi, my name is Fred Rass. I live at 49 8th Avenue. I'm one of the old people in town. But anyway, nobody is arguing the fact that marijuana was voted to be legal in Atlantic Islands or any other place that's totally different. It's like apples and oranges right now. What we're talking about and what I'm against, and I think quite a few people are against, is the distribution centers. The locations that have had distribution centers, anybody that goes by them, perhaps in Eatontown, Neptune, other areas, you see that there's a load of people around the centers, hanging out in the centers. There's a lot of cars. Some of the proposals that I heard for town was to perhaps use the old Marine View Savings and Loan location for a dispensary. That'll actually decimate the other businesses that are in that shopping center, number one. Number two, go ahead. No. What I suggest, maybe because this is a passionate thing, there's a lot of people for it and against it. And quite honestly, I don't care if people feel that they want to use marijuana, to use alcohol, or whatever else they do. I'm not judgmental on that, and I'm not saying anything that's adverse with people that do that. But I don't want to see large groups, large lines of people around the buildings. I don't want to see multiple cars occupying all the parking spaces that are very short-handed in town at this point in time. I don't want to see something that's happening in some of the dispensaries, like in Neptune area, from what I understand, that people are standing around the buildings
Some people have to relieve themselves, so they don't want to lose their spot in line and they relieve themselves out in the open. I don't want to see any of this go on in town. I'm not against people that want to smoke marijuana. I'm not against young people, because I was young once. And I'm not against people that drink. I'm not against anything. As long as people are good people, that's fine. And there are good people. I do take a big offense to the fact that there was 250 people for Kevin Smith and they're all marijuana smokers. I don't think that's 100% accurate. There may have been some people there that were marijuana smokers, not at that location, but on their own. But that's their business. What I'm against is the dispensary. I hope that the council uses common sense and does not allow dispensaries in town because of the congestion, because of the potential for quality of life violations in town because of it. And, you know, you talk about the profit. If you have a $5 million net profit from a dispensary, that comes to $100,000 a year. If you have problems with long lines of people around and congestion and potential problems, and you have to hire or expand your police department by one police officer, that's $100,000 right off the bat. Also, by the ordinance that you proposed, by your ordinance that was brought together and that we were going to vote on, or you were going to vote on tonight, with that ordinance itself, you were talking about the distance from the schools as being 300 feet. The federal law, which marijuana is still a violation federally, identifies specifically the federal law 1,000 feet from school. Also, if you want to do some research, because everybody's into research, I guess, Colorado's having some problems where what happened is some of the dispensaries that are making deposits of cash, because that's the way it's being done, it's going into their local banks. The local banks then send it to the Federal Reserve. At the Federal Reserve, because of the confiscation laws, which have been in effect since I was a young cop, the federal government is seizing some of the cash. And what's happening then is they're going back to the banks that the money came from. The banks identified the money, the cash, from the dispensaries. So just imagine in business, if I'm paying my payrolls and my rent and everything else, and then all of a sudden the bank comes back to me and says, instead of that $500,000 deposit you made, you only gave me $300,000 because $200,000 was seized by the federal government. And if you look into some of your research, you're going to see that there are dispensaries in Colorado that are in trouble because of that fact. But I just urge everybody to use common sense. We don't need the dispensaries in town. I'm not against people doing what they want to do. The other thing is that you keep saying, oh, it's 21 years old to go into the dispensary. That's true. And it was been 21 years old when I was a 15-year-old in town for drinks, for booze. And unfortunately, when I was 15 and 16, we were able to get beer from somebody who was 21. So that doesn't even make sense anymore because it's just entering the location. That's like saying you couldn't go in a liquor store at 15. No, but you can pay Joe Blow to go into the liquor store and bring out booze. But please, I urge you and ask you, do not approve the dispensaries in town. And it's not political. It's a shame that it came out through some of this Facebook stuff that it was political. It's got nothing to do with politics. It has to do with quality of life for our little town. And I don't want to destroy it.
Thank you. Mr. Krause. Mr. Krause.
Take this off so that I can be heard a little bit. Lines.
Wait.
Address?
James Crowe, 77 East Side Drive. In Massachusetts, there were several locations that had lines for a few weeks. I went by Eaton Town the other day, there were only three or four people in the line. The lines go down. At the planning board, the borough engineer who's here tonight testified that the peak visits to a dispensary, cannabis dispensary, it was roughly 50% of what you see at a coffee shop or a donut shop or a convenience store. And if you think about it logically, compare this to liquor. There are only a handful of people who go in every day and buy a couple little bottles. Most of us will buy once a week, a couple times a month. So the lines will, once people have their own personal inventory, that will go down. The lines are a red herring, so to speak. Cash business. Valley National Bank over in Highlands has a cannabis division. I'm a gray-haired person. I don't use Venmo. But Valley National has a type of Venmo product that people will be able to use to buy cannabis without cash. Valley National will also pick up cash at a cannabis dispensary. In addition, under the ordinance that was proposed, and I believe under state regulations right now, cannabis dispensary must have an art club. Bob Sherman might be more worried about his jewelry store being robbed than a cannabis dispensary in town. And then finally, the other thing that I want to comment on is that marijuana is not physically addictive. There is no medical evidence anywhere that it's physically addictive. It is psychologically addictive to a very small number of people. But people can be psychologically addicted to almost anything. Virtually anything. Oreos. Mm-hmm. That becomes mm-hmm. somebody who's a little bit mentally deranged. Not to say that some of the prior speakers are mentally deranged, but we talked about a medical condition that's unrelated to the substance. And then finally, one little comment on some research that I did in Colorado that I thought was somewhat humorous. There was an increase in driving under the influence of cannabis, but almost exactly matched the decrease in driving under the influence of alcohol, which to me meant the same knuckleheads who used to drive drunk are now driving under cannabis.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Thomas. No, I'll come back to you.
Very much. Gerald Thomas, 44 East Highland Avenue. If you don't mind, I'd just like to stand over here.
No.
Sure, you have to be on the other side.
Sorry.
Fair enough. It's hard to address one group and another.
Well, you're always supposed to address the mayor and council.
All right. Mm-hmm. Fair enough. First, I want to say from this meeting tonight, I thought it was a little bit ironic that we commend our first responders and police for saving lives, yet we contemplate and look at a business venture that sells a debilitating drug, which, as some people pointed out,
Mr. Thomas,
killed anybody. But it often leads to debilitating drugs. Now, I know, not personally, three teenage deaths here in this town, one up Prospect Avenue.
Something
there's a memorial by First Presbyterian Church. And the third family, I don't know. But you have this, these drugs in our society. And you, as city council, are supposed to be looking at the public good, the public safety, not the business venture, not the tax revenue, not how much money is going to be generated. Okay? That's not what you're about. And believe me, we survived a couple hundred years without a drug dispensary. A couple hundred years. And I feel sorry for anybody who thinks you have to go that low to that extent to pull in a few dollars. It's pretty sad. And let me also say this to you, City Council, be careful. Be very careful. Because people are going to watch how you vote on this. And it may be a topic. And I suspect it will be a topic in the next elections. Public safety comes first. That's your job. You spent a good hour tonight commending people for doing that. And the final thing I want to say is I'm very concerned and very unhappy that you'd even entertain something like this when you've got an elementary school in our town. Who's going to watch out for those children? Who's going to watch out and make sure someone's not trying to get them hooked on drugs? Real estate values, yes, that's important, but that's not on the top of the list. The health and well-being of the citizens is number one. All right? Excuse me for being vocal about it, but everyone should know better. Everybody should know better. There's really nothing to debate. If somebody wants to use marijuana, fine. You do it in their house, do it in their basement, do it on their porch. When he said they're going to legalize it, I think that's what the law intended. He didn't say anything about dispensing it in public. All right? I hope you can grasp that and have an appreciation for it. Because, you know, a family's most important asset is the next generation. And you shouldn't be pushing them in the direction where they're going to look towards drug addiction. You should be looking in that direction where they're responsible citizens and they grow up and lead happy, productive lives. Alright? And drug dispensaries in the public is not the venue to go. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Yep. Oh, I know. I'm trying to.
Hi, my name is Rachel Rodriguez. I live on 31 East Washington Avenue, and I've never done this before, so I'm a little nervous. I'm 19 years old, so in no way can I smoke marijuana. So I'm just doing that. Nor do I have any interest. I'm not gonna lie. The same way I've been to North, I saw heroin in the world before. Had no interest in doing heroin. So I think really that is a more of an education issue. And that's a separate issue because what we're here to argue is not the morality of using, it's having a dispensary in our town. And well, my friend was more about health and wellness, I'm not. I am about profit. We have a very small state park. We don't have a lot of recreation for young people. And while I understand the concerns of maybe this would encourage young people to use marijuana, I could argue that about alcohol. There's a giant, it's a brewery right next to our school. I went to Atlanta Commons Elementary School. I can tell you that was way more distracting than the amount of alcoholics or future alcoholics that I went to school with was way more concerning than any weed usage that was happening. So I don't think this is about young people either. I would like the profit to go up because I really think that this town
can be put on the map. I really think that there should be more in this town for us than for our next generation. But I don't think enough is being put into that. There's a lot of, you know, broken down buildings, a lot of things that need to be replaced at school. And I think that you could use what's considered a bad thing for a good thing. And I do, as my friend is a medical patient, it is about ease of use. Yes, they're going to do it within their own home, but having to drive to Eaton Town or having to drive to wherever the other ones are, it's just more a medical patient. It's just, I guess, inconvenient, especially when you have more serious issues that you are trying to use this medication for, such as like cancer or cerebral palsy or whatever that you're using it for. So that's all I wanted to say, just that I don't think the issue should really be whether or not cannabis should be in a town, because it is in a town, and it has been in a town. And instead of getting ahead of it and trying to regulate it, I think we're focusing on the fact that it's not really moral to have it in our town, when there's a million other things in our town that can be considered not moral.
Thank you. Oh.
Hi, I'm Charles Rutledge, 24 Highland Place in Manhattan. So first I'd like to thank all of you. I know how tough this job is. I know I've been bored just sitting here all evening, and you have to do this all the time. So I really do appreciate each and every one of you and the effort you put forward. And also, Dante, the point you were mentioning before with regards to the reconciliation for the school districts, how long this takes, the fact that this will have impacts on generations. You know, I don't think it is asking too much to really do the due diligence. So I agree to the extent that someone needs to step in and say, let's make sure we're not making any mistakes here. Why not make all this?
Thank you.
So I appreciate it again. The fact that it's taken 4 years. Wheels, the government turn slowly, but hopefully they come to the right conclusion in the end. I appreciate it, but three-party negotiation must have been like, they're never easy. So again, congratulations for getting it this far. On the cannabis issue, you know, I'm not going to debate the is it good, bad. I like maybe a little bit different perspective, because somebody doesn't live in this town very long, moved here relatively recently. Picked this town after we had raised our kids, and one of the things that we really liked when we came here is to see what I call free-range kids. That's kids that were able to wander the streets, ride their bikes, didn't have parents ushering them around everywhere they needed to go, and we just thought that was great. And frankly, we found that to be sort of unique and refreshing. And I think it is, right? And if I think about our downtown area, I think about that as a part of the neighborhood that we all live in, as opposed to a business district or a commercial district. And it's easy enough to go, and you know, we're a lot of people made statements about statistics tonight. I can't say that I know a lot about that. I spent a little bit of time on the internet. There's plenty of statistics to be seen, so I'm not going to reiterate those. And I'm going to listen to the planning board meeting. I'm really interested in learning more about that. And I might encourage those of you who haven't done that, that's probably a really good idea. So I plan to do that. So my only real comment here is that you have a very special town here. And being here maybe for many, many years, you don't necessarily appreciate how special it is. But I think it's great. And as you think about, you know, what you want to do here, where it might be placed, I think that's something that you really need to think hard about, to kind of preserve what's, I think, unique and special about this town, and the opportunity. And I kind of wish I had for my kids to be able to have them just shoot out the front door and to go into town and go to their friend's house and feel really comfortable and good about that. So, anyway, take a little bit of different perspective. But thanks for listening to me apply on.
Where'd you move from?
Thank you.
Oh, sorry?
Where'd you come from?
Okay. Okay, thank you. Thank you. Mr. Fisher.
Thank you, Mayor Mark Fisher. I still live at 91 Third Avenue. A couple of cleanup items before we get back to cannabis. Seabright, we paid Seabright a bunch of money for a study. Did you ever get a refund? $160,000.
Not to my knowledge. We have an inquiry in with HFA, our accounting firm, and I haven't gotten a definitive answer from them yet, but to my knowledge, no.
Okay, thank you. Second item is the fee schedule. The fee schedule hasn't been updated in many years. That's all the cost of different things that the borough supplies to the residents. I'll use an example. The overnight parking permits is one. I know Adam, before he left, was starting to update the fee schedule, or at least he said he was, but I don't think we ever got there. So I'm just putting out a pitch for the fee schedule to be updated. And Mr. Ferragina, the parking committee sent you their suggestions on parking fees. You can just consider that in the update.
Okay.
The third thing is EV charger revenue. EV chargers will be great. But where is that revenue going to wind up? In the general fund? Will it wind up in the environmental commission fund? Will it wind up in the parking committee fund?
General fund.
The general fund.
It's revenue to the borough. Yeah. So it'll go straight to the general fund.
So back to cannabis. A lot of passion here tonight, which is very good. A lot of people for the ordinance, a lot of people against. But right now, we really don't have an ordinance. The proposed ordinance is so out of date right now since the state sent out their interim document to enhance the rules that they set, I guess back in the beginning of the year, 35 pages of notes, clarifications, and a lot of additions. Some of it has a lot of specificity, whereas with the delivery service, you know, a couple of months back, there was very little detail. There's a lot of detail as to what a delivery person of cannabis has to do in implement. IDing people, the record keeping, keeping those records for so many months, turning them over to the state, but none of that was covered previously. So currently the ordinance is way out of date. Going back to the planning board, I listened to the recording of the planning board. I was also at the meeting, but I wanted to refresh my memory. They actually called for a parking study. Most of you people know why. And also come up with a traffic management plan. And that's all part of their job as a planning board for an application.
That was the subcommittee that brought that forward.
Yes. Now, a couple of other things with their suggestions, the hours of operations. I disagree that there's differences between retail and manufacturing. I think they should be the same. The school buffer zone was only two blocks from East Garfield to East Highland. They came up that, you know, that's a linear area along First Avenue. They actually came up with a buffer zone, and they suggested, I believe the number they kind of settled on was 500 feet. But they never really put that down as a finished number. They came up with, hey, let's draw a block around the school and another square 200 feet out and another one 500 feet out and another one 1,000 feet out. But they never said which box they selected. So I thought that was kind of weird in their suggestions, but at least they're looking at it.
Well, I think they left it to the council. I read
There was disagreement. So
So I don't know whether I agree with the box or the linear, but at least we're talking about it. The blackout windows, I'm glad they didn't go for that. I disagree with that from the first time I looked at the ordinance. I think it's kind of unfair to a business person trying to run a cannabis business versus any other business in town. I also found a couple of things that the planning board didn't land on for a change, and I'll give you a couple of examples. One major one is the as it states in the ordinance. No person under the legal age of 21 shall be allowed in any building where cannabis is sold. So what do you do if you have a mixed-use building with retail on the first floor and four apartments upstairs? They didn't pick up on that one. It has to be changed. They also didn't address the signage, and I know that was kind of a big debate here when this was first introduced. We got told a lot of things about what people didn't want on the sign, or on signs, but they never really talked about it at the planning board. So they haven't made any suggestion on signage either. There was no odor control specifications. I know that's a big deal, with especially in manufacturing facility. The security cameras, there was no specificity. They did say that it had to be on all exterior parking areas. Well, if it's on First Avenue, there really is no parking area, because they wouldn't have on-site parking.
Unless it was a business that had a rear entrance exit that went out onto the municipal lot. You know, Mark, in regard to the blackout windows, Councilman, you might be able to clarify, but last time I read, the state law was that you are not allowed to be able to see inside the business from the sidewalk. Uh-huh. So the state regs are always going to supersede whatever our municipal ordinance.
But there's other ways to do it.
And they're like first of all,
that's a prime example. I don't know what you call that stuff, but if you're inside the store, you can see out. And at nighttime, you can actually see into the stores,
right.
That store, as long as it's lit. And I know it's just an applique on the glass. Maybe that's a good example of what could be used.
And did you go back and you looked at that, the 21 or over? So the state regs right now say no person allowed into the building.
That's
or
right.
Is it a typo? Conceivably,
no. It says they're not allowed in the building. So if you have a multi-use building,
the ordinance says.
Yeah. The ordinance says that a 21-year-old can't go in the building. It doesn't matter what's in it. So they need to specify not allowed into the retail part.
Yeah.
Of the building.
Right.
Instead of the building.
Gotcha.
Okay. And then the last thing is, it was this is kind of troubling to me, but I went back and found the record. On June 23rd, there was discussion. Mr. Whitehead, in fact, had the floor, and he was summarizing his impassioned speech about not allowing cannabis in town. He said, "The thing that I'm concerned with is the distribution points in town and the exposure to our children," similar to what we heard tonight. Councilwoman Hohenleitner said, "I totally share those, and I'm only speaking for myself, and I would say that there are even elected officials in our town that consume these products that have children that can't be getting it from their supplies. If they're not getting it from a medical supplier right now, then there was another cause. My concern is, what is the reason behind people being against it? Is it because people don't want to have to be on record as consuming these products? So I assume the people that Councilwoman Hohenleitner was describing were the council people. So my question is, who is this? Who are we talking about?"
This is not a proper question. So I would advise council that they do not have to answer. If the question is who on the council uses cannabis, that's not a proper question, and I would advise people on the council that they do not have to answer.
Okay. If they so choose.
I would advise everyone to not answer.
Okay. With that, that's all I have.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Kevin Hoffman. I live at 4 Valentine Road in Atlanta Heights, and I'm happy to follow the signature because I also have some suggested amendments to the ordinance as written. This is also my first time, so I'm also nervous, but I'm a little nervous, so it might do some reading. I wanted to just flag that the state did some good work in ensuring that there were social justice and equity principles in their, in the law and the guidelines, and I'd like the town of Atlantic Highlands to also make an effort and actually an overt effort to state that they will follow social equity and justice principles in applications, evaluation, licensing, and leasing enforcement. I also noted in the ordinance that there's a $10,000 application fee, initial application fee. I feel like that's high. I feel like in keeping with the state, again, social equity and justice principles, we're trying to lower barriers to entry rather than raise them. I know that Red Bank does have a $10,000 fee, initial fee. Other towns have much lower fees. This is at your discretion, so I invite you to think about that. And I also wanted to propose an amendment to the ordinance acknowledging some of the past harm that criminalization of cannabis has caused. And I'll just read that quickly, and I can send this to you by email too. Whereas because the burden of criminalization of cannabis has fallen heavily on communities of color and the poor, social and racial justice considerations must be highly valued in all decision making by the Atlantic Islands Council. So that's all I have to say on that tonight. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. So, yes, sir. Yep, that's it.
I'm Bob Hesky. I live at 142 East Washington Avenue. I'm also a local business owner. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to voice my support for legalizing distribution, sale, and manufacturing of cannabis in Atlantic Highlands. I talked to a lot of my customers. There is discomfort, whether it's subjective or objective, about having on First Avenue. I think that a compromise that would probably keep a lot of the community happy is to have the distribution on Route 36 or over in the light industrial district. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it's speaker tonight.
Thank you. Truly appreciated. Yes, ma'am. Nope. Okay.
So my name is Judy Adigna. I live at 126 Avenue. I don't really understand what we're talking about when we say manufacturing. And there's a lot of questions that haven't been answered, like what does our police force feel about the distribution center? Do they have an opinion that they'd like to share with us? Most everyone is throwing out taxes and how, profitable it would be for us. But most of those taxes are going to the state and not to Atlantic Highlands. So I just have a lot of questions. I don't know where I go to get the answers for what Atlantic Highlands. Are we talking manufacturing? Like a big, the brewery in town? Are we talking about, a farm?
Manufacturing.
Yeah, so
manufacturing is can take on a variety of things. As soon as you take the flower and you start to change it, it's considered manufacturing in most states. And you could really get technical on it, or if you start taking what they call pre-rolls or joints, and you start throwing keef and other things in it, you're making, it's manufacturing, right? It all depends. It's making oils. It's generally not big, but it can be a bit of a production. Just depends what type it is. It's just, it's varied. I guess the biggest thing is it's a varied process.
I'm trying to be open-minded about this. I obviously have friends who have medicinal marijuana or cannabis, but I don't see how it benefits the town itself. If Highlands is opening up one and Kingsford has one, so why do we need it in a residential town? I mean, we're starting to have more and more apartments on First Avenue, which makes, although it's the industrial area or however you refer to it, either the business district, but it's still also residential. I mean, these are things I think I would like you to consider. And I really would like to hear from the police department and their opinion.
So the police department
does not have an official opinion. Their opinion, their statement to me has been that they are committed to enforcing the laws of the borough, the state laws and the federal laws. And to enter into a political discussion is not prudent, and that's their position.
But doesn't that put them in an awkward position that they have to, it's illegal federally, but it's not?
They will adhere to the laws that they are
bound to
adhere.
I mean, if you take a look at the actual ordinance, this 12-page ordinance, there's a list of definitions, and I believe manufacturing is among that. You can go onto our website, go under government, legislation, and then you will find the ordinance itself, if you care to take a look at that. Definitions will be there.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Good evening again. Zach Brown, 6 Victorian Brook Drive. We've heard some facts tonight on both sides, and I think unfortunately facts are only as useful as the case that the person is trying to make with them. So you can find facts to support any decision on this subject matter. I have come before this body and cited studies from other states. And reminded that New Jersey is not any of those states. So it's ever the worst in comparisons to goings on in Colorado, Washington State, even Massachusetts, which personally I think is the most demographically similar to New Jersey. So if we were going to look at statistics, that would be the state I would look to.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that anybody who's going to come up to this dais and make a case one way or the other can find statistics. And facts to prove their case. So all of those studies and all of the whether cannabis is good or bad or dangerous or safe or the greatest thing or the worst thing, I don't think any of that is particularly relevant to this body. The fact of the matter is that cannabis is in this town right now. It has been for years, and whether you allow a dispensary here or not, it's here. I can send a text message to a number and have a delivery guy at my house in 20 minutes. So whether we have the dispensary, I think people who are concerned about children having access to cannabis should consider the fact that it's probably going to be harder to acquire a child to acquire cannabis that's coming from a legal, regulated, licensed stationary business than it would be for them to text one of these illegal numbers, have an older sibling or anybody. None of these places, people are checking IDs, and there's no regulation on what they can sell. So for anybody who's concerned about cannabis as a gateway drug, I think that is not backed up by science. And if there is any validity to people consuming cannabis and then moving on to harder drugs, the science that I've seen says that that's coming from the dealer, not from the drug itself. So people who are buying cannabis illegally, that same dealer might have XYZ drug that they may then say, hey, you like this, you might want to try that. That's never going to happen in a legal dispensary. I think that should be pretty clear to everybody. So to me, this is a zoning issue more than anything else, and I appreciate the people who have come here tonight and expressed concerns about parking, about traffic flow, about where it belongs, where it's appropriate and where it's not appropriate in town. I think personally, I may have seen cannabis legalization and got a little bit too enthusiastic, and maybe I didn't stop to consider the impact of traffic and how busy it might be. So maybe I think I hear the concerns of my fellow residents in those areas. And I hope that if the council goes to redraft this ordinance, maybe there can be some consideration given to language in the ordinance that will help alleviate some of those concerns. Maybe like requirements that they have to be able to process a certain number of customers per hour to reduce the potential for lines outside, or encourage them for a certain period of time on opening to maybe be appointment only. And maybe we say this is not appropriate for First Ave. Maybe it's not appropriate within 100 feet, 200 feet, 500 feet of the school. I think we can have this conversation without it turning into cannabis is the devil, it's going to destroy this town, or it's the greatest thing ever, and it's going to be, you know, nobody's going to have to pay taxes anymore because all the tax revenue is going to come from cannabis. I think there's a middle ground here that will make everybody unhappy to some extent, and to me that would be a pretty good compromise. I have a question. Mayor, you've been pretty clear that opiates are a major scourge on society, mm-hmm. And very dangerous and lead to a lot of unfortunate early deaths. And maybe this might be a question for the attorney here. If the council were so inclined, could they pass a ban on the sale of opiate narcotic drugs in the borough? Is that something that could easily be done?
We're doing that.
Are you saying drugs that are already illegal?
No, legal drugs. So like a ban on sale of cannabis in the town.
I would have to look into that, but I that might be difficult, but I would look into that.
Okay. So I'd be curious to see what that would be. And I'd be curious to know how many people who support a ban on cannabis dispensaries would also support a ban on the sale of fentanyl in our town. Because that is a very, very dangerous, very lethal drug that is sold legally in this town. We've talked about addiction. Opiates are physically addictive. If you stop using them, you will go into withdrawal. There's a medical terminology for physical addiction versus mental addiction, and as we discussed, you can be mentally addicted to anything. But physical addiction has a scientific definition, and it involves withdrawal symptoms when you stop using, which is just not a symptom. People are in crisis. People are suffering from diseases of despair, and they're turning to alcohol, and they're turning to narcotics, and they're turning to things that are destructive. And I feel very strongly that cannabis is a much less destructive outlet for those people to mollify those feelings. Okay, so all that having been said, I have a separate thing that I wanted to mention. I think we've all heard about the spotted lantern flies in Atlantic Islands. I saw maybe one last summer. I've seen thousands of them this year. And mm-hmm. I recently learned, thanks to the town Facebook page, that they actually are very much centered around a plant called the Tree of Heaven. And since I've learned about this tree, I see them all over town. They are everywhere. And I've brought Japanese knotweed up as an invasive plant mm-hmm. of concern, and as we kind of discussed, there's really nothing to be done about that because of its growth habit and the way that as you cut it down, just more grow and it grows so quickly, and it's a huge problem. The Tree of Heaven, to me, is orders of magnitude worse than Japanese knotweed, not only because it is a host for these spotted lantern flies, and I actually found one of these trees in my own backyard, and these lantern flies are all over it. There's another one, not in my backyard, but on my street, and they're all over that as well. It's horrifying to even think about, but two things on the subject. One, and I don't want to create any more work for our DPW than they already have, but maybe we could, in partnership with the Shady Tree Commission or the Environmental Commission, look at some sort of remediation plan for getting rid of these trees, especially some of the more established ones, the ones that have already grown big, grow 60, 70 feet tall, and they're also dangerous for the plants around them. They secrete chemicals that grow the actual plants.
So if I can just interject, I would not encourage anybody to just arbitrarily cut down any tree in the borough of Atlantic Islands.
Right.
So, and if you're interested in taking down or trimming any trees, you have to come to Borough Hall and fill out a permit, and there's a process to that. But the issue of this particular tree is well noted, and I'll have a conversation with internal folks to see if there's anything we can do to rectify it.
On the topic, I've seen talk of traps for these insects. Traps. They have the sticky band traps that go around the trees. I do not support those because those can catch beneficial insects. I think the mayor knows mm-hmm. what they're doing. They have netted traps that these insects
crawl up.
They crawl up the tree and sort of get caught in a but some kind of disposable container. So maybe the town, the Environmental Commission, Safety Commission can kind of...
Great idea.
And maybe put together some of these stuff that can be disseminated to the residents of town, try to put some of that under control.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mayor, we have one on Zoom.
Wait.
After, if you like.
Good evening.
I'm Pastor Richard Shaw, and I've been a pastor for 70 years.
What is your address, sir?
Counsel many people who have...
What is your address, sir?
I'm sorry?
What's your address?
Address. What is your home
address?
What is your home address?
Your address, Pastor. What are your last pastor? Sure.
Yeah, I know, but we have to have it.
4447 Avenue, Atlantic Highlands.
Okay.
And thank you. I want to thank you for your patience, first of all, and you've listened patiently to many people. So I won't keep you long, but I just wanted to say that I've had 70 years' experience as a pastor, and have counseled many people who's through that time who at least have claimed that marijuana had a deleterious effect, a bad effect on their lives. And today, just before I left to come to the meeting, I had a phone call with a member of my church, and no longer lives in Atlanta County, but he did until just recently. And he said, Pastor, please tell the people tonight that do not bring marijuana into my town. And I just leave you with that. And that was, I've had many other experiences with it, with the Pagan Motorcycle Gang, for example. But I think you probably heard enough tonight, and just thank you again for your patience and God bless you.
Thank you, sir. Okay. Thank you. I'm going to go to Zoom.
Oh. You just lost the hand.
Okay.
I'm going to make it real quick. Up to the chairs.
Oh, sure. Come up forward. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I think everybody heard enough, but I'm not going to give statistics in any way. I am one of the older folks, and I do listen to the young people. I was in the field of mental health for 35 years, so I'm not going to give you statistics, but I consider it weed. I grew up, it was weed.
No.
It wasn't marijuana, and it wasn't cannabis, but it was weed. And I did try it when I was a kid. Experimentation, everybody did. Most everybody. Well, in my crowd, it was. And the thing was, with the weed and the alcohol, when we needed alcohol, we were 16 years old, and in New York at the time, you could be 18 to get it. We were 16, and we would, hey, if you buy it for us, we'll give you a bottle. So it was very easy. Access is easy. And these kids today, as in my generation, you can get whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. You get in trouble if you get caught. But the whole idea was not to get caught. Bingo. Okay. Now, with hearing everything, I think it would be a better idea to, with all the people saying how many problems kids have, families, depression, emotional distress, I think it would be better to have a family counseling center there rather than another store for something. I mean, it sounds like this town could use that rather than having another store for it, because they can get it easy. There's 183 other towns in the state of New Jersey who are going to offer this. And as one of the residents said, well, I can get it in 20 minutes. Well, so then what's the big deal? Why do we need another store? You can get it in 20 minutes. Just get it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Is that hand back up? Story that.
Staying right at 1700 Drive. I wasn't aware there was
They were regulations. They weren't in the changes.
they take, you know, you have the state legislature passes the law, and then the administrative bodies will write regulations based on the law to interpret them with specifics. And there's a 60-day comment period. So when you or I, whoever, anybody interested reads it, there's times they can voice their opinion, kind of like we're doing now. And then they'll take that in. The CRC will then make the recommendations, and they may change certain ones. And so that's what that is. So conceptually, it really is not supposed to change, but it potentially would change because of the comment period. Am I correct?
Yes. My understanding is that it's a comment period on proposed amendments to the existing regulations. So the proposed regulations could change the existing in force regulations, and in addition, as you said, based on the public comment period, the CRC could change the proposed amendments to the regulations.
Yeah. And they have a link on their website where you can go to all that. So we were looking at.
There's percentages of those comments, and percentages always seem to be crazy sometimes. So I want to jump off the canvas real quick and go back to a comment that was made earlier with the Seabright and Shore regional situation. I guess that was the regionalization.
Mm-hmm.
So from my understanding, what I heard from Hudson people being a former teacher up there is that $50,000 a kid when they're going to Shore Region, but they had to pay. I don't know if that's true. I'm just throwing that out.
No, that's incorrect. Seabright was paying. The newspaper article, one of the newspaper articles, not that long ago, was pegged at $135,000 per child from Seabright going over to Shore.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a large number, and I think a gentleman made a statement earlier that Shore Region was going to lose money, but they're right around the corner. Like, you know, it's not the boundary, right? I mean, isn't it a boundary change? It was a
region
there, etc. So, the a couple more things is the percentage of 75%. Somebody from here, I said that was a state percentage. How do we know the percentage right here in town of how people feel about the cannabis? Was that something that was voted on? I didn't go to the polls here in town.
It was a referendum vote in 2020, Stroyhead. It was the 2020. It was state question number one. Okay. And it was basically in two parts. It says, you know, should cannabis products, adult use cannabis products, be legalized and become illegal? And if so, should we create a market where these products can be sold and the taxation can be levied by local municipalities? And the results from the county clerk were 72.5% of Atlantic Highlands residents, or 2,154 residents, voted in favor.
And that was the number?
2,154. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Sure.
And Councilman, do you know just off the top of your head, that was a high turnout that year. How many voters in town? Was it over 3,000?
Just over 3,000. In my understanding, so just over 1,600 voters voted in favor of President Biden, and over 1,200 voters voted in favor of President Trump. So just to give you perspective on these numbers.
Well, I mean, I can add something to that, guys, because I think that there's maybe I'm misunderstanding this number, but 72.5% was of the 2,154 voters.
No.
Because, there's 4,312 residents in the population of the community, correct?
Not all voting.
Correct. So if this, so you're 72.50, that's of the entire people who voted.
Right. And so 2,154 of them voted in the affirmative.
Correct. So out of that would be, so if you took 2,154, 72.5 of that.
No, not of that. That's the number that voted.
That's the number voted in favor.
So 2,154 is the amount of, is 72.5% of the total population?
No.
Or of the total votes?
Of the total votes. But 2,154 people voted yes. So it's like, what was the number that voted
no? I'm looking for it.
But out of 4,300 residents, over 3,000 people voted.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's a high turnout, very high turnout.
This presidential election.
Yeah.
He just say, sir, please continue.
I was very impressed with some of the people who spoke tonight. I suppose that it's the first time we had somebody that has some professional background speak with some of the numbers that she had. I don't know any.
Ms. Greenleaf. Ms. Greenleaf.
Ms. Greenleaf. And also, the lady who was really, I thought that was interesting, numbers that she was saying. I thought the delay is a good thing, because from my experience, I think for a couple of weeks, there's not a lot of people that are even aware that there's a vote coming. They're not on cannabis issues, so this gives more time for people to be educated on either side, whatever their preference is. And the last thing they need to look into, I heard there's a spot of land that flies in cannabis.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Whitehead.
Get high before they fly.
So just to square the circle, folks, so there were 2,971 total votes on state question number one. 2,154 voted in the affirmative, 817 voted against. 72.5% to 27.5%.
Okay, thank you. You'll have to say your name and address again. I'm sorry.
Judy Adignan, on that subject, is it possible then to get it on the ballot for November that we just have a yes-no question? Do you want this dispensary in town? And then you just vote on it, and then this way you have the real numbers about the town too.
It's really too late to put it on this November.
Yeah, the process and time frame that would require, I don't think at this point would be feasible.
Is there any other way you can think of getting a true reading from the town to have a feel about it? Because I hear both ways, but I don't really know.
Yeah, my suggestion would be that to encourage residents to express their opinions to their elected officials. That's the best way that they can gauge what the public wants and make their own assessment.
And you mean at the local level?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Yep, right here in the Atlantic House.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am. Oh, Ed.
Here I come. Ed Thorne, 26 Grand Avenue, Atlantic House. I've lived here 45 years. Let's let the residents decide what we want, not the council. You put it on the ballot for the vote. You didn't say whether it was to sell or legalize it. Not on the ballot did it ever say, are we going to sell it in town? Yes, we all voted to legal it in town. I have no problem with smoking it and doing whatever the hell you want with it, but I don't want it sold in my town. And residents in this town don't want it. I own a business in this town. Every one of my residents, every one of my customers said, we don't want it sold in town. Mm-hmm. Let the residents decide. Like you said, I'll get them to call you. I'll get them to do whatever's necessary. You know me. I'm out there and I'm going to call the people.
Yes, you will.
Let them know how we feel. And we don't want this. We have 4,000 residents. Half of them are children.
Mm-hmm.
They're not voting. We'll put this to rest. I told you I'm going to be sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, this is Sassy, 33 South. I don't know how you guys just hold it on. It's painful. Anyhow, I have really a lot of mixed feelings about this. I'm sort of in between. Well, I've stayed with it for almost 30 years, raising my two children here. And when I first moved here, you could buy guns and bullets on First Ave. So, times change, things change. I mean, I'm happy that business is no longer on First Ave. I think I find that more dangerous than nowadays, especially than some cannabis. I didn't vote for legalization in New Jersey, so you guys are a bunch of hypocrites because now you don't want it in your own backyard. So, you're not you voted for it. So you opened up the can of worms. It's here. The ball is rolling. All I have to say is
I'm not even sure if I want to say I'm for it or against it. I am against it being really close. I think we're a small residential town, and I think to shove it down our throat, being right on top of the residents and homes, is kind of rough for me to accept. I really do, but I know it's here. But what I have to say is this town has a really bad reputation for keeping on top of our ordinances. We have some ordinances in this town that should have been changed 30 years ago. So I have no faith in our town doing it right. I think it's going to happen regardless of how we feel, but I don't have faith in the town building the correct ordinances. Just like the regionalization started 3 years ago. I don't have the faith in them doing that correctly. So I'm against that. The faith, I have none. Sorry. I've been here 30 years and not too much has changed. 7-Eleven was freezing down our throat for how many years to be a 24-hour business. We didn't change the ordinances on that. It's a small example of a business in town that nobody wanted. 24-hour 7-Eleven. So, balls in your court. I mean, obviously, most of the people that want it probably don't have them. But please, just please, pay attention to the ordinances, see all the pros and cons, everything that can go wrong, play devil's advocate, just like we try to play devil's advocate with the regionalization, right? Think forward. Think forward. I mean, it's new generations. A lot of, you know, just please really look at every little detail. It's been a town. Whether it's in our town or if it's in Highlands. If it's in Highlands, we're still going to have the same problem. It's right here. We're like half away. I mean, let's face it. So, just... Everyone, really do your homework, because
thank you.
I don't
think
we can prevent it.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
Everybody has to be involved.
Thank you.
By the way, we have an ordinance on the books now that bans any future 24-hour businesses in town.
Oh, now we do?
Now. Unfortunately, the horse was already let out of the barn, but we have that on the books now.
It's a perfect example, but thank you. So we have to learn from all those old mistakes.
Right.
Thank you. Is there anyone online?
No hands, Mayor.
So, I'm looking and I don't see anyone with their hands up right now. So, I'm going to ask for a motion and a second to adjourn.
To adjourn. Only
those. Close public comment?
Yes.
Second.
Yes.
Murphy move.
Oh, yeah. And... Close public comment, and now we need a motion and second to adjourn. I'm doing it all at once. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, everyone.